Sweet Dave. You have people worried.
I know. If we may clear something up very, very quickly. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Dave Bennett isn't leaving the station. Dave Bennett has not passed away. Dave Bennett's never been better. He's in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where people are saying the storm of the century is hitting. So we kiddingly, both yesterday and then again today, said, you know, well, this is the end of Dave Bennett. He'll go to Ann Arbor and we'll never see him again. But it's all in jest. He's fine. We've gotten a lot of texts from Dave Bennett fans saying, please, please, please tell me Dave Bennett is not leaving the station, or worse, he's fine.
Dave Bennett texted saying, right. I'm leaving the station?
Right. Right.
No, I didn't jump in on this little ruse that you and Cochran are doing. He'll get back.
He'll be fine. Dave's the most resilient broadcaster in the history of the game. He's fine.
And it's blizzardy. I mean, I did hear Tom Skilling use the word blizzard, which scared me.
They're closing airports. No, they're not closing airports.
700 flights have been canceled.
That's what they're doing. They're canceling and postponing flights. One of my wife's best friends was supposed to be flying in today from Manchester, New Hampshire, where there's a little bit of snow, but not a lot of snow. And they canceled that flight already just based on the fact that they think there's going to be so much snow.
It's an interesting situation, isn't it? Because Loyola Academy and Wilmette is closing early.
Yeah.
But they may well get 2 inches of snow.
Isn't that crazy?
And the closing early thing, Steve, they've already gotten there. It's yeah. like it, they should just yeah. close then.
Yeah, right.
What, have the kids stranded?
I don't know. I mean, most of the closings, and you can see the full list at WGNRadio.com. I should have said that earlier. But,
or have Ray Rayner read them to you, as he
yeah.
did with For All of Us.
I wish.
Yeah.
I'm hoping Religious Ed gets canceled tonight.
Namaste Academies in Chicago, that's on the list. They are open.
They will remain open,
yes,
Wendy.
I was looking at the list earlier.
You have nothing to worry about there.
This is crazy. They never canceled our schools.
There were days, I remember when I was a kid, where it was a blizzard nonstop, and we had school. And now, just on the speculation of a lot of snow, they go, oh, we better not.
Well, but again, most of the cancellations are in the south suburbs or in Indiana, where they are going to have a blizzard.
But it hasn't happened yet.
It's happening. No, it is happening there. It's hitting the southern areas. In fact, if you go a little further downstate on I-74 and I-72, they've got several semis jackknifed. The road's blocked in several areas.
So all right.
It's
a real storm, and it's coming here. It's just going to stop. I mean, it's not going to come, you know, it's not going to hit Chicago Avenue. It's just going to stop here at Grand Avenue.
Awesome. We have to take a break because we have the legendary Rick Springfield on hold, and we're going to talk to him in a second.
Yeah, he's got some new music, so we'll talk to him. We'll find out about his career and all that kind
of thing.
Ask
him about the blizzard.
I'll ask him what he knows about the blizzard of 16. Stick around and spill money on WGN. You know, I wish that I was handier around the house. Those were the original lyrics. People don't know that.
Hey, we're about ready to light this party up. Rick Springfield on the line with us, musician, actor, author. How the heck are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
We got to light this party up.
And you're the guy with the lighter. So light us. Rick, things are good. The music sounds good. You got new music coming out. The acting career is going well. Things are good for you, right?
Yeah, we're just about to go out on tour to support the new record.
And Arcata Theater is one of the stops in St. Charles on Friday, March 18th. Hope you're not hungover from the big St. Patty's Day celebration for Rick Springfield. Do you celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Well, yeah, I have a few drinks.
That's it. You know, really everyone but the Irish celebrate.
That's how it is. Rick, we could talk to you about music all day long, but I have to bring this up. In True Detective last year, you played one of the creepiest doctors I've ever seen in my life. How did they decide you're the guy to play that creepy, creepy doctor?
I read for the part. I read for another part, and they'd already offered it to someone, so they liked the reading, and they wanted me to play Dr. Pitlore, and it was, you know, it's always great to play against type. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Dr. Noah Drake was not that creepy.
No.
From General Hospital.
No, he's not creepy. This is the creepy side of Noah Drake, I guess.
If they opened a practice together, Drake and Pitlore, do you think Pitlore would get any business at all? Because I don't.
Well, he's more a psychologist, supposedly.
Yeah.
All right, so Rocket Science is the new album. It's out now. Light This Party Up is what we started the interview off with. That song rocks. And I mean this in a great way. You should sell that to, like, NFL or NASCAR, because it just sounds like it could be in a promotional commercial. It is rocking.
Yeah, it's. I wrote that actually in Tahiti. I was on vacation, and there's no way to you can't feel down when you're in Tahiti. So I always take my guitar with me, and I actually wrote it with Ricky and the Flash in mind, because they were looking for a final song for the film. But I think it was a little too rock and roll for Meryl Streep's character to have believably written. So they went with another one, which I think really worked. But I like the song, so I kept it for my record.
Rick, please tell us that at some point you gave Meryl Streep some acting advice. There had to have been a time where you said, "Hey, try this. Maybe see if you can do this." That must have happened, right?
Of course.
Of course it did.
And she played her own guitar, right?
I helped her with the guitar. Yeah. You know, this guitar thing is, she'd ask questions. I always work with an A-list like that. I mean, she's just, you just learn so much working with an actor like that.
Yeah,
that was my dream. I wish I would have just been a rock and roller and not had a family, and maybe I'll just bail on them now.
That's a beautiful thought.
Never say never.
That's true. So you have the new album out. You've also helped Dave Grohl fight Foo, haven't you?
Yes. We had a great time doing the South City doc. That was amazing.
That is his documentary, basically about the San Fernando Valley recording studio that was your home away from home.
Yeah, Sound City. It was where I used to hang out all the time. Stevie Nicks and I would hang out there all the time because we didn't really have homes. So we hung out there trying to, you know, hoping to make it. And Dave tells a great story about it in the documentary. It's a difficult story to tell, the whole analog versus digital thing, but to a layman, but he did such a great job, and I think getting us all together to write songs was a smart move as well.
Rick, talk about the evolution of your music. What can you do today that maybe you couldn't quite pull off 25 or 30 years ago?
I'm a lot more free to just play and write whatever I want to play. Once you're going to get known for a groove, it's sometimes difficult to get the audience to move with you when you want to change. I did an album called Tao that was very different in 1985 than the one that had come before. And it gained fans, but I think it also lost fans because it was so different. It was, you know, very, very different musically and lyrically. Now it's just I put out a record when I have enough songs and you know, have new music to play when we play live, so it doesn't feel just like a retro show. And that's important and exciting for me, too. Keeps it fresh.
17 U.S. Top 40 hits, and this one, in my opinion, one of the best ones ever. Jesse's Girl. Obviously, you're going to whip that out at the Arcata, right, on March 18th?
We always whip out Jesse's Girl.
Now, Rick, I had not heard this until just now. I think this is pretty good.
The song, yeah, it's got a fancy chorus.
Yeah.
But it spans the age groups, because my son is 16 and he's a musician, and I said, oh, we're talking to Rick Springfield, and he's like, oh my God, Jesse's Girl, really? Mm-hmm. So it's still out there.
Yeah, it is. It's taken a life of its own, on which I'm proud of, but I don't know if I had much to do with, you know, once I wrote it and recorded it on its own after that. But it has picked up speed, certainly, as time has gone on. And a writer hopes for, you know, a song like that.
And you are honored on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and a special location on the walk?
Yeah, it's outside the Clear Channel building, but it's actually just around the corner from where I used to live when I first came here in 1972 from Australia. So it's a cool thing. I used to walk along Hollywood Boulevard looking for the Aussies who had stars there, like Rod Taylor and Joan Sutherland, and, you know, so it's one of the last of the old Hollywood kind of awards.
Rick, since you're Australian and since you're a musician, can you help me with my dream, which is reassembling the Bay City Rollers? Is there any way you can help me with that?
I could probably find a tartan.
All right. All right. That's a start.
They screwed up Tartan for everybody, dude.
Yes, they did. Yes,
come
they
on,
did.
Seriously? I don't think so. I actually did a show in Australia. They had a big kind of a group show with like all these artists that were on the show called Countdown in Australia. And they toured, did a small arena tour of Australia. And the lead singer, what was his name?
Derek something? Oh.
Yeah. He was a very nice guy, actually. He was very nice, but they had him on that. But he wasn't wearing tartan anymore, so maybe, maybe reform them without the tartan and the big hair.
Maybe.
You kind of had that hair as Noah Drake. Not quite as spiky, but definitely mullet-like.
It wasn't big. It was too coiffed for a doctor.
It was a hot doctor. I'm sorry.
Anyone who spent that much time in his hair wasn't operating on me, I'll tell you that.
That schedule's grueling, though, isn't it, Rick? You don't have any time to rehearse. You get 12, 15 pages a day, and it's just you better do it and do it right the first time, right?
Yeah, it was brutal. People don't realize it's actually the hardest acting, producing, directing, and writing gig there is, because it's all talking heads, and they're going to, you know, churn out 60 pages and do 60 pages a day, which is crazy. I mean, yeah. I've done Rick in the Flash or Californication or True Detective. You know, you get like maybe three and a three quarter pages a day. So you really get a chance to work on the character with the salts. For me, anyway, it was always about just line memorization. I couldn't get past that, just having to remember all the words. So that's not what acting is about, but that's as far as I could take it. But there are people on soaps that are amazing at it.
Talking about remembering all the lines, I mean, how do you even do that with your catalog of songs? Because I know even Mick Jagger has like an iPad in front of him because they make iPad stands now,
sure.
So you can scroll through the lyrics.
Right. That's what we do. I know all the old ones, but for new ones, I definitely need lyrics. I actually, in the Sound City, we did some concerts with all the Sound City people, and I went back. I was backstage when Stevie Nicks was on, and saw that she had two scrolling monitors for one of her old songs. So I don't feel so bad having one.
Isn't that amazing? Because really, you think about it, how can all these musicians, I mean, really, like the Stones, all these hits, how in the world could they remember it?
Yeah,
especially if you change, I mean, the songs you do over and over, you know, it's not a problem, but when you change songs out, it's pretty mind-numbing, the amount of stuff you have to remember.
Rick Springfield on the line with us. The new album is called Rocket Science. It's great. You can get it. It's everywhere. You're going to be at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles Friday, March 18th. You can go to oshows.com to get tickets. And you can also check out Rick's website at rickspringfield.com. Now, this tour has got you coming to St. Charles the day after St. Patrick's Day. Are you going to find time after the tour or during the tour to keep up with your acting?
Yeah, I just did a movie called Traces, actually, and we're now looking for a new TV project, because the writing on TV is just amazing now, and I'm very excited about doing something there.
And just with all the Netflix and Hulu, TV has just exploded again.
Totally, yeah, but the writing is first class. I mean, it's all great writing. I remember doing acting on TV shows in the 70s, and even in the 70s, I'm going, dude, this is so lame. who'd believe this, you know? Like, but now the writing is just—it's fabulous. It's gigantic.
I kind of attribute that to shorter seasons because
can't
believe how short the seasons of shows are now.
Also, competition. I mean, there's a lot of different platforms now. You know, I did Rockford Files and Incredible Hulk and Wonder Woman and all those shows, and they just recycle the same stories. They just recycle them from show to show.
That's true. Now, although, how many people can Wonder Woman save? I mean, there's not very many different situations to be in.
Yeah, that's true too.
Well, when you put on that outfit, saving someone wasn't really the issue.
Rick, good luck with everything.
She looked pretty damn good in that outfit.
Oh, so good.
What was that commercial where she was coming out of the water and the actual words were right at breast level?
Yeah.
So you looked at I can't remember what that was, but yeah. I always said she had pretty eyes, and every guy I talked to said, what color are they?
She had eyes?
Yeah. Didn't notice.
Such a pleasure to talk to you.
She's a great, really great person, actually.
Linda Carter.
A couple of the Wonder Womans, and she was very sweet to me.
Good.
And do you still keep in touch with all these people you acted with?
No.
Nope.
Actors are jerks.
Such a pleasure to talk to you.
The musicians. Actually, my best friend's an actor. He's Doug Davidson on The Young and the Restless. He's been playing Paul Williams for like 35 years. And he's one of the good ones. He's brilliant at it.
So with all these reunions and everything, you know, with Fuller House and all these people getting back together, is there ever going to be a General Hospital reunion of sorts?
Well, General Hospital never went away.
It's still running strong.
It's still on.
Yeah.
You can't reunion if you never go away.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was still on. I have a life now.
I know, it is. Yeah, I mean, they've asked me to come back a couple of times. And I went back for the 50th anniversary just for old time's sake. But, I mean, it is a lot of work, and it's all line memorization. I don't really have, you know, that much free time anymore.
Well, we'll be looking for you on the big screen, the little screen, and on the stage at the Arcata Theater on Friday, March 18th in St. Charles. Rock on. You're doing it for all these years.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks.
A good rest of the week. That's Rick Springfield.
Hubba.
That's who that is. That's Rick Springfield. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
On a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
You added that. That's not in the original version.
His mama cried, Bill. Please.
I know his mama cried.
It's the best song ever recorded by Elvis Aaron Presley.
Do you think so? Is this his best of all? Yeah.
Come on, no, you don't get chills?
You're getting some adverse reaction from Steve.
No way. He just kind of talks it through.
Oh, this is soulful and spiritual. And
did
he mentioned Chicago.
Life? Did this change your life? It did?
Listen to him.
I take a look at you and me. Are we too blind?
Oh, yeah.
Have you never heard Teddy Bear?
Oh, that is the worst song ever recorded.
Come on, let me be your teddy bear.
Stupid, Elvis.
Teddy Bear was his follow-up to In the Ghetto. He always called it his follow-up, his part two.
Oh, he died with his part two.
This song is being played for a reason. Number one, to get some emotion out of you, which it did. And number two, it ties into this next story. Do you like your controversies? Do you enjoy a good controversy?
Bring it on.
The kids over at Fairfield University, this is a Jesuit college out in Fairfield, Connecticut, had a party. And why wouldn't they? They're college kids. College kids should have parties. That's part of the fun of college. You go and you learn and you study, and then you have a good party afterwards. Is there a problem with that? Yeah. What's the problem? The problem is they called their party a ghetto party, and then they made it a theme party, and the worst part is they have no idea why this was a bad idea. Listen to this audio from the local news, and then we will discuss. Listen to this.
More on this story, Katie.
Audrey and Brent, Fairfield University is calling the party culturally insensitive. Others are calling it racist, demeaning, and disgraceful, and hope it spurs Fairfield University to create change.
This wasn't your typical weekend college party.
I heard about the party yesterday, and I was appalled.
On Saturday night, Fairfield University junior Iman Jabara says some of her friends went to what was dubbed a ghetto party at an off-campus house along the beach, documenting the night on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
They were wearing, like, wife beaters. One girl shoved, like, a ball, I guess, in her shirt and was like, in a Snapchat caption was, guess who the daddy is.
Iman says she's seen racism on campus before and that it's a part of her school that needs to change.
And the fact that there was a party that was completely racist is just, it's disgusting. I don't want to associate with that as part of our campus.
Most, not all, she says, are upset about what happened.
Some people are very upset about it. And a lot of people are demanding action. But then there are other people that are, like, joking.
One Fairfield student who claims he wore a hot dog suit to the party posted a mock apology on Facebook, saying he now understands that, quote, pretending to be a hot dog is an extremely degrading action. Another student said he is offended the ghetto party turned into a race issue, adding, quote, I know plenty of ghetto white people. Hashtag White Lives Matter. Fairfield University Vice President of Student Affairs Tom Pellegrino says the party was not a representation of the student body as a whole.
I was disturbed and disappointed.
And goes against the school's key Jesuit value of men and women for others.
You have students engaging in behavior that is insensitive and harmful to others in the community. So it's antithetical to what we say we stand for as a Jesuit school.
Let me reiterate my favorite part of that, and it's the student, one yep. of the students who attended the party, who was offended that the ghetto party turned into a racial issue. He didn't think it would. He just thought it'd be a fun ghetto party, but then at some point that ghetto party turned into a racial issue.
But there was also a young girl who was appalled by the party and said they showed up in wife beaters. Yes. That was bothersome to me, too.
Not just wife beaters, but one of the girls puts a ball underneath her shirt and then with the caption on Instagram, can you guess who the father is?
Right, that's but the girl pretty. Said wife beater. Right, that's know. What bothered
that's also,
me.
That's also very troublesome.
I kind sure. of like the hot dog guy.
I don't understand the hot dog guy. What's that all about?
I don't get it either, but it's funny to me.
In honor of the Burger King?
No, I don't think so. Well, I don't understand the hot dog tie-in at all.
I don't either.
I don't get that.
Is that very street?
Maybe he was at the wrong party.
Maybe, right. Wait, is the hot dog party in this dorm, or is the... Oh, the hot dog party's across the street. I apologize. I'm at the totally wrong, insensitive party. All right, so let's do this. Let's try to examine why these kids don't know why this is offensive. Because once you're of college age or high school age...
Once you're in fifth grade.
I would say that's around the barrier where you start to say... Wait, this
is odd.
There are
poor people. There are people who live in bad parts of town. There are people not like us. You get that at a young age.
Wouldn't you think? Well, I have no idea how a bunch of college kids could be scratching their heads going, we're just having a ghetto party. There's nothing wrong with that.
Wearing our wife beaters. That really bothered me. She was appalled by the party. I know. But then, oh yeah, they showed up in wife beaters.
I know. All right.
Tank tops?
Yeah, you would go with that, right? Wouldn't you?
Or Dagotees, as I call them, which is equally offensive.
Still offensive. All right. 312-981-7200. Weigh in on this, please. What's wrong with this picture?
Why was the hot dog there? If you know that, right. too, Bill and I are right. baffled.
Right. That doesn't make any kind of sense. All right. Give us a call with your questions and or answers. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. If you're just joining us, let me quickly catch you up, and then we will go to your phone calls at 312-981-7200. The small college that's Jesuit-based, it's a university in Fairfield, Connecticut, Fairfield University, the name of it. Students there had an off-campus party. I want to make that clear. This was not on campus, but these were the students who attend Fairfield University in Connecticut. They had a party over the weekend. Nothing wrong with that, except this was, as they called it, a ghetto party, something of a theme party. That's disturbing, even more disturbing. They have no idea why anyone could be upset about something like this. They were just having some fun, right? Nobody's losing in this. 312-981-7200 is our number.
I want to throw this one out here. Hi, Scott.
Hey, how's it going today?
Pretty good. What are your thoughts? Okay.
Well, here's my thought. If there's an issue there, right, it's got to reflect on the parents. These people, these children or young adults, are old enough to know if they're instructed. And so I just think that this is a reflection on, you know, this next generation that really has a lack of input from their parents.
But, Scott, don't you think a parent's job is to teach kids right from wrong and to be a kind person? And then when they're this age... aren't they on their own to do what they want? How does that reflect on the parents? I bet if we talked to the parents of these people, they'd be shocked.
I would hope.
Interesting. You know, I think the parents would be shocked about anything you told them about their children because they're probably really not involved between, you know, the electronic diversions that the children have and the demands that the parents have for two income households to keep up with the Joneses. You know, there's just this gap. And so, you know,
that's a general statement, though. You don't know their parents. And I just feel like, have your kids done no wrong ever?
Well, I don't have children. Mm. As a child, I did plenty of things wrong. And
your parents' fault?
I'm sorry?
Was it your parents' fault that you did these wrong things?
Oh, absolutely not. What it was a gap between my understanding of their instructions, right, and their best attempts to keep me a well-adjusted individual. And, you know, when trouble arose, they were there. They knew about it. We got a little ass-kicking going on. And, you know, the situation was handled at home, not by the schools, not by the church, you know, not by the dean of the Jesuit students, for crying out loud. I mean...
For cry
Jesuit students, Jesuit students, you know, with Jesuit student parents not knowing these things.
The school is not too proud of it. I hope you heard this part of it, Scott, but the school is not too proud of the students who took place in the ghetto party.
Well, in any time you get something in the media that, in my opinion, might be blown a little bit out of proportion,
you know,
you're going to obviously have this. What's the school going to come out and say? Well, we don't really think wife beater is a racial comment, or we really, you know, we really don't think that there's just black people in a ghetto. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
They've got to defend themselves.
Well, thank you for your opinion, and we appreciate it.
My wife always says to my daughters, if Reese or Kylie are going to a party or something, my wife always says this, and I've made fun of her for it. She'll say, just real quickly, make good choices. Just those words, make good choices. And I always think, is that sinking in? But if a situation were to arise like this, where one of my daughters gets an invitation, or somebody calls her or texts her and says, hey, we're having a party, it's a ghetto party, that would be one of those instances where hopefully those words would just play out in their heads and they'd go, this is what my mom means when she says make good choices. Do I want to go to a party that's called a ghetto party? How's that going to reflect on me?
And right. How's that going to reflect on you as parents?
No,
on her
as a person.
But if one of your daughters went to a ghetto party to look at the jerks that were having it, is that because you and Terry failed? See what I mean?
Not failed, but maybe didn't reinforce the fact that life is a series of split-second decisions.
That they have to make on
their
own.
And you have to make on your own.
It's
right.
Not your fault
No, but it's not... But it is our responsibility to ingrain in them the fact that they have to be ready for those decisions. And you have to quickly, sometimes within a second, think what's the good and bad that can come of this. Right?
I agree. I just, you know, parents can only do so much. I'm sorry. And I will say that. I wasn't a great kid. My mom did her best. And now I'm a wonderful human being.
Yes.
I didn't go to a ghetto party, and I wouldn't have gone to a ghetto party. Someone is saying that this is, what's the big deal?
Well, it is a big deal, because if you're on let's say you're a minority on this campus, right? Let's say you're a minority who attends Fairfield University.
White people live in ghettos?
White people do live in ghettos, but if I quickly said the word ghetto to you, the image you get wouldn't be a bunch of white people, would it?
And this I don't know, so I'm just reading a text. The term ghetto was originally used to round up the Jews, so why all of a sudden is it offensive to black people? It should be offensive to Jewish people. Were these people dressed up to look like Jewish people?
They were not.
Is that term ghetto used for that?
I'm trying to remember. I don't know the exact derivation of the word ghetto, but I know that it means a rough place to live, essentially. You know?
Yeah, I looked it up. It's an impoverished, neglected, or otherwise disadvantaged residential area of a city, usually troubled by a disproportionately large amount of crime.
Right.
No mention of
race
there.
Right.
Urban or relating to inner city life. And the third one, poor or relating to the poor life.
Years ago, I was doing a television show that shot at WTTW Studios, Channel 11. There was a restaurant just a couple of blocks away that I would pass every day on my way to work and my way home from work. And on the attraction board, it was one of those lunch restaurants. You know, I mean, they're open for dinner, but they do their business at lunch.
Right.
Businesses in the surrounding area come and have hamburgers, hot dogs, chicken, whatever. On their attraction board, it said the words, now serving ghetto fries. It said that for like 3 months. Now serving ghetto fries.
And what does that even mean?
To this day, I don't know what ghetto fries means. But I also know that that might have scared some business off. I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of people who passed by and went, boy, I have a taste for some. I wasn't one of them because I don't know what they are. But I also imagine there was a handful of people who drove by going, I don't know if I want to give them my business, because that seems kind of racist to me. And maybe it isn't, but just the term is like, oh, a ghetto fry? What is that?
I don't even understand that. And does that relate to the hot dog guy that went to this party? Because I don't get that
maybe
either.
It does. I don't know.
Someone else, I'm quite frankly appalled at the over-the-top reaction to this. We have become almost paralyzed in our attitudes towards people. When is it politically correct when is political correctness going to just go away and be replaced by compassion? These kids were just kids. The fifth at some point, coming in so fast and furious. We have so many people and not enough time to get to all of them. Somebody thinks it's offensive on so many levels.
It is.
And the worst one is somebody said that when they went to a Northern Illinois University, and this is no reflection whatsoever at stab at NIU, they said they had an ugly girl party back in 1974, and it went really well until people figured out what the party was. Somebody else is saying...
Wait, explain, what would happen at an ugly... Would you invite ugly girls?
Yeah.
Only, oh, all right, that's fun.
That's not fun, it's mean. and also, everybody's saying this was off campus. So,
it was.
I mean...
It was.
The school, it doesn't reflect well on the school, and of course they have to say something, but I'm sure there's some other stuff like date rape that goes on outside of the school, too.
So how does it play differently? I know it does play differently, but if it was at... one of the campus sanctioned housing places, one of the dorms or something like that, it plays differently, doesn't it? Then the campus really has to take control of this and say, we got to suspend somebody. We got to talk. We got to figure out what went wrong here. But I guess if it's off campus in a way, they're not as responsible.
It's not a great theme to have, but there are so many other bad things going on in off campus parties that I do feel this is kind of an overreaction, my opinion.
All right, let's do this. We have to break. The news is coming up next. Steve will give you the news, and then a lot more show coming your way after that. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill F., and it's Wendy Snyder. Hannah and Dana here from Flavor HD. You just heard Steve Bertrand. It's the snow of the century. What sort of food should we be stocking up on to make sure that we will live?
Food in general. We got to buy the bread, by
bread
the milk.
Foods,
right.
Bread.
Insulated food.
No, yep. I will tell you, and Dane came from less west than I did, but it was fine by me.
Less west, famous music producer.
Yeah.
Well, Dane and Hannah, the forecast says you'll be fine.
Yes.
See, I love that
Thank
about you.
Steve.
Yeah.
You will
you,
both
Steve.
Live to see another day. Yeah.
I sent Jim out to buy milk and bread and lunch meat.
Just to be safe.
And sure. Beer, of course.
Well,
yeah,
of course.
You need processed
the staples,
meat, always.
The absolute staples.
Anything salty.
Hannah, it says here on my sheet the words poison potatoes. I don't usually put those words together. Why did you want us to talk about poison potatoes?
Well, you know, I like to cook. And the other day I was thinking I haven't ever, this is embarrassing, I've never made my own homemade mashed potatoes. And it just felt like something that was very attainable and achievable and I should do. And
yeah.
I've made kind of a conscientious decision to try to make things more homemade and more from scratch and see how we all feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so potatoes are easy. It was 5 pounds. I made 5 pounds of potatoes. I was like, we're doing this. But I have a couple of recipes.
Boy, it's
Mom,
fun at
I
your
can't
house.
Lift the yeah. bowl. There's too many potatoes in the potato bowl.
Aren't you finished yet, child?
No, it was... most recipes will say, you know, make 1.5 pounds of potatoes. And I was like,
go big or go home, says Hannah.
But we're also making like shepherd's pie this week. So I'm using the leftover extra potatoes to make the topping for the shepherd's pie. So I'm trying to combo some effort. And it was really pretty easy, except my potatoes were green. And I know green potatoes are poisonous.
Yeah, I mean, I am... First of all, I have a problem with my produce. I can't just go and pick out one potato or one lime. I'm there for 20 minutes trying to find the perfect
one. The best of
one.
The best, yeah.
And with potatoes, every once in a while, you will see green,
and I did the bag. I did the bag of potatoes, so I didn't really have a huge amount of investigation ability.
You didn't check each and every one before you put... What are you thinking?
Because I was thinking I wanted to get in and out of that grocery store. But what you do and what it is if your potatoes are exposed to light, the chlorophyll, you know, obviously has the reaction. There's your green, but it actually increases a chemical called solanine or solanine. And that's actually poisonous and can cause all kinds of neurological issues if, here's the if, mm-hmm. if you eat enough.
Right. You need a large,
you need
like
5 pounds.
But obviously, which I could have knocked out. And there go my family. But it's worse for kids. So you have to be more protective. But the simple thing is you just peel them. Peel past the green and you're good to go.
Well, I always
cut it off.
Or cut it off. Yeah.
Like mold on the cheese.
Yeah. Just
ish.
Well, we always get five pounds of potatoes too, but inevitably you use some of them for whatever you were going to do at the time, and then the rest of them kind of go bad, probably turn green, and you end up throwing them away.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, and Hannah's big on, you know, expiration dates and writing things on things, and so if you do,
I sharpied all my potatoes, what date they were going
to. Oh yeah, you have to.
You make 5 pounds of mashed potatoes. How long is that good for?
Obviously, you're going to refrigerate it because when you make the mashed potatoes, there's cream, there's butter. There's things that are going to go bad. So you take care of it right away. I'm going to utilize those all within, you know, like a 4 to 5 day period.
Aren't the green potatoes fun for St. Patrick's Day, though?
Well, I mean, they always are. I mean, you're going to dye those, of course.
But everybody does that. Eat potato chips, and every once in a while you'll get the green one or the French fry. Yep. And I won't eat them because it's green, so I throw them out.
Well, it's not easy being green. Kermit taught us that. But that's okay. If you have an occasional one, no big whoop. It's fine. You're
except
not going to have
green. No one's going to eat it.
Except for the fact that it's green. So, but yeah. Like if you're in a dark movie theater and you snuck in some French fries and you don't know, you're fine. That's not enough to make you sick.
That's the good news in all this. There's a potato leek soup recipe that you have.
Well, I mean, who doesn't look outside and think, boy, soup would be great.
Right about now.
Yeah. And if you're not going to make tomato soup with grilled cheese, which is what I would recommend, I would go potato leek soup. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. And the recipe can be found?
I believe at your Facebook page because I already sent it to Kevin.
All right. So go to our Facebook page. That's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on Facebook. It'll be found there.
And the secret ingredient to this,
which makes it super savory,
is the lead in to Seth Zura, our upcoming guest, is bacon.
Bacon.
So we talk about bacon. It's a comfort food.
All right. So we'll talk about bacon and Bacon Fest, which tickets are quickly becoming available, but they go very, very fast. We'll explain more in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, along with Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD, and they have brought a very valued guest.
The Baconator.
The Baconator.
Well, behold, he is the bearer of bacon.
I'm the bacon eater.
So, I mean, when it comes to Chicago, great events, great everything, all sorts of things, but when you can have some of the best restaurants in the area, and now he's even expanding to restaurants within Illinois, at least at this point, right, but still outside of the area. And have those restaurants, some of the most iconic ones, great chefs. The one thing they all agree on, regardless of whether it's kind of a mom-and-pop diner kind of situation or elevated fine dining, is that they all love bacon, that their fans love bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And Seth Zura has created an event which is sold out perennially celebrating bacon. It's called Bacon Fest.
That's right. Bacon Fest is coming up April 30th and May 1st. We'll have three sessions over the course of 2 days.
Tickets just sold out. That's how much people love it.
That was all it took. You can still get tickets at our website at baconfestchicago.com. And if you love bacon, if you're like me, I think you probably do love bacon. This is the place for you. It's like a bacon wonderland. You walk in the door, you look around, and everywhere you look, there's somebody there holding out a piece of bacon for you, holding out a creative bacon dish, offering you a beer or a cocktail.
It's
so,
what many people imagine heaven to be like.
That's right. It is heaven on earth.
Yeah.
In many religions, it is. If you look at the pictures, it looks a lot like those shots from Bacon Fest.
We're about 50-50 on religions, but if you love bacon, you want to be there. So go, get onto the website and
check
it out.
How many years is this now for
Bacon Fest? This is our eighth year doing it. We're going to have...
It does. I mean, people say this about almost everything, but this does get bigger and better every year, doesn't it?
It gets better every year. We're doing amazing stuff with bacon. We're going to have over 160 restaurants this year, and we give each of them like 50 pounds of Newski's bacon. So if you come to the event, you will see what a chef can do with 4 tons of bacon.
And Seth brought some in and described just some of the kind of angles that some of the chefs are taking. This was Michael Jordan specifically, but some of the ways that they're using it.
Yeah, so Michael Jordan's Steakhouse right here on Michigan Avenue is a good example. I brought in some snacks today. They have something simple, bacon on a stick. It's glazed, it's sweet, it's chunky, delicious.
I want to marry it.
We have a bacon cheeseburger slider with cheddar and Michael Jordan special sauce. So some people go on the sandwich route, BLT, classic bacon delivery method. And then I also brought bacon empanadas, also from Michael Jordan Steakhouse. And again, this is like you give a chef 50 pounds of bacon, you say, hey, think of something cool, think of something fun, and they will transform it into something creative and delicious for
you to
try.
What is the dipping sauce with the bacon empanada, which is very good, by the way?
I think it's like a chimichurri. That's a traditional empanada dipping sauce with parsley and olive oil and stuff like that.
And a little heat.
A little heat, a little kick.
Seth, the bacon that you brought in today, at least the one on a stick, which you guys call bacon lollipops, I believe.
Sure,
right?
Is that the term
I just heard? All right, so on those and on the bacon slider, that's not your typical thin, crispy bacon. That's a much thicker slab of bacon. What is that exactly?
So, I mean, the chefs can choose what they want to get. They can get a whole slab of bacon. Like when I go on TV, I bring a whole belly just to show off.
Yeah.
They can get sliced bacon. They can take that slab and make it into chunks. But, you know, a different approach reveals a different bacon experience, a different pleasure to explore.
Bacon, the difference between bacon and, what do they call it, pork belly? Or is that just what Orion calls it?
Well, pork belly is the raw material of bacon. So you take a pork belly, you cure it, and you smoke it, then you got bacon.
So the thicker, bigger piece is what they call...
A pork belly. This would be more pork belly, the bacon on a stick, because it's the thicker cut.
But it all comes from the same spot?
It all comes from the same spot. Right here, I'm pointing at my belly.
Oh. Right.
Don't, I will bite it.
But if he were a pig, that's where it would come from.
He's got tattoos of all the little sections on there.
Has the rest of the world fallen under the spell that we here in the United States have? Is it as popular, I guess it wouldn't be everywhere, but around the globe there are plenty of places that are recognizing this as...
Absolutely. Yeah. I think bacon originally was Chinese. So the idea of curing bacon came from China. It's very popular in Korea right now.
Yeah.
Like, pork belly, like slabs you can fry up. But yeah, everybody loves bacon. It's a universal equalizer.
But we all loved bacon. I mean, growing up, we once a week would have BLTs. Why all of a sudden this complete bacon-ammonium?
It's the pendulum swung back from the, it's not healthy, you should not eat this. And everybody was like, screw that, I really, really like it.
We can thank Atkins for making bacon popular.
But that's how good it is. People know that long-term, like if you do nothing but eat a lot of it, how bad it is. But it's so good, you just go, all right, I'll take that risk.
That's why on April 30th and May 1st, you should take a chance. Take a chance on bacon. Come to Bacon Fest.
Everything in moderation. I think the pendulum has swung and it's kind of stuck there, too. And the reason that we had Seth in so early, not only to enjoy bacon, which is always awesome, but is the tickets just went on sale, and it does sell out. And Seth is kind enough to be able to, listeners of the Flavor HD segment of Bill and Wendy, be able to, we have two tickets available for Bacon Fest.
So one winner will walk away today with two tickets. Yep. We'll do that sometime in the next 3 or 4 minutes. Is that fair?
And, all right. And also, I do want to put out a public service announcement. If that weekend you are missing a dog... you might want to go to this location and look, because there are hundreds that smell the bacon.
I thought you said there's some counterfeit bacon
going
on.
No.
But it smells so good.
Yeah, if you drive by the UIC Forum while Bacon Fest is going on, it's like there's a cloud of bacon just sort of hanging in the air.
Yeah.
Bacon fog. I spent my whole life living in it.
Seth, give us one or two examples. You said they're doing very creative things with it. What's one or two things that we've never seen or heard of before, but they've been doing?
Sure. The classic one I always think about is there's a chef named Pat Sheeran. Mm-hmm. And he took a slab of bacon, a big belly, and he cut it into kind of big chunks. And he made that into the outside of a bacon sausage. So instead of using a sausage casing, he used bacon as the outside of the sausage, and then he braised it with maple and sliced it real thin and topped it with whipped up pancake batter. So it was like pancake foam. So imagine, you know, all those good feelings you have about your childhood and bacon for breakfast sort of elevated into this creative, wild, delicious stuff. We've got people doing stuff with like fish, bacon cured trout we've had. So kind of it's like almost lox, but it tastes a little bit like bacon. We got, you know, we have creative chefs in Chicago and they do wild stuff, and Bacon Fest is the only place to try it.
And even though in all these different kind of incarnations of bacon, so many different things, but some of the best spirits available and then some great craft beer too. You guys have expanded that.
Yeah. So we've got our beer sponsors, Revolution, you know, local craft brewers, Goose Island, of course, is going to be there with some rare stuff to pass out. We've got Lakefront Brewery down from Milwaukee. Lagunitas, of course, is going to be there. And if you just want a PBR, we got PBR, we got Labatt Blue, we got lots of options, plus cocktails. Lots of cocktails.
Boy, does this sound good, doesn't it?
It is good.
It really does.
It's fun. And the nice thing is, if you buy your ticket, it's all inclusive. You just walk in, you don't have to think about it. You just grab what you want, eat what you want, drink what you want, be happy.
You're not going to go home hungry.
It's like going on vacation at one of those all-inclusive resorts, except no airfare. You just go to the UIC Forum. It's like right there, and then you eat all day.
It takes place April the 30th and May the 1st, a two-day event. Mm-hmm. And we are giving away a pair of tickets to a lucky winner. How do you want to do it, Wendy? Just a random caller?
I think we should clear the lines and take a random caller. Right. And I think Seth should pick that number.
Oh. Seth, pick a number between 1 and 20, please.
Let's have lucky number 7.
Lucky number 7. If you are caller 7 at 312-981-7200, you will pick up a pair of tickets to Bacon Fest. You can't even put a dollar value on this. It's impossible.
Well, you could.
I wouldn't even want to try.
No. But for those people who aren't lucky number 7.
Yeah, where do we go to get tickets?
Yeah, Bacon Fest, Chicago. .com. Tickets are $100 for general admission and $200 if you want the extra deluxe VIP experience.
And who doesn't?
Everybody wants the VIP experience.
They fan you with bacon.
Right. It's quite an event. We have a winner. It just took that quickly. Let me announce that Cameron of Streamwood is heading out to Bacon Fest, he and a friend.
And you like bacon, Cameron, I hope?
Yes, I like bacon very much.
Well, you're going to get a lot of it, so hang on. We will set you up, and Kevin will get your vitals.
Thank you, Seth. We appreciate you being here. Hannah and Dane, always a pleasure. Thank you guys for being here. We'll take a quick break, then Kim has the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oh, the dogs are out. Little Bernese Mountain Dog walking by the studio. Why do you look at me like that, Bertrand?
I just wouldn't know what that was.
My dog is part Bernese Mountain Dog.
You're good at identifying dog breeds. That's one of, I think that's one of your biggest skills, one of your best skills.
I watched the Westminster show.
Of course.
I made out with that little pit bull that was on Steve Cochran's show earlier this morning.
Yeah, that wasn't weird at all.
He nibbled on my chin and accidentally licked my tongue.
Oh my God.
Steve Cochran did that to you?
Again?
What's with that?
Are you serious? You let a dog...
A pit bull,
not just a dog,
it.
Steve.
A pit bull is a dog. Why would you say a pit bull?
Because there's never been any instances of pit bulls going crazy.
And it will never happen
because
to me.
Because of people like you. Seriously?
Right. Pit bulls don't bite people.
Bullets do.
Bullets bite people.
You guys, chihuahuas bite people. German shepherds bite people.
That's why I don't make out with any of those breeds of dogs.
You're just two old men.
All right.
That's what you are.
Get off our lawn, then.
Good point. And I'm glad you're here because these are skills.
Everyone can tell, yes.
Here's the skills every man should master. And I know you're getting ready for your Wintrust business lunch, but Bill and I wanted you in here.
And if you guys want me in here, then I have to come in.
Oh.
These are things that every man should master, and we would like to talk about these, discuss, and we may have to do it at a later date, too, because there are so many.
What do you think, both Steve and myself, and Kevin as well, do you think we fit most of these, we can do most of these or not? Do we have these skills to be real men?
Probably.
We're like lumberjacks.
You're a real man, Bill.
Yep.
I got to tell you.
People think I'm a Viking sometimes. I go to a store and they're like,
confused you with a Viking.
Sir, we don't allow Vikings in our store.
Never. Never once did they confuse you with a Viking.
A Viscount. It's a Viscount.
Right, that's what it is.
Or Viscount.
Right.
There are 77 things on here which we just don't have time to go through. And I will say that aside from my husband, you three are the guys I'd like to hang out with
one
day.
We will look at your application and get back to you in the next 6 weeks.
Right.
I try to be nice. You're still dicks.
No, give us some available
times. That's all
times.
I got to say. Learn how to take a photo. And Kevin, you can attest to this. When you came on board, I kind of said there's a way to take a photo where, you know, you're centered or off-center a little artistically.
Because of you, I've learned this skill.
Take it from above.
Tuck your chin in, too, I've heard.
Steve's showing us a photograph that he just took, and it seems to be a nice picture. I don't know how to take a picture. I never take pictures of anything. Kevin's pretty good at it, and Steve seems to be.
Does this mean, like, actually take a photo or being able to have a photo taken of you?
Take a photo.
Well, you open up.
Fill the frame. Take a photo, like you do when we have guests. Okay. Like, I get really nervous when somebody hands Bill their phone and says, could you take a picture?
I don't know which way to even face it.
I know. I feel so sorry for you.
That's a Bill thing. That's not a man thing. Taking a photo is not a gender thing.
I don't think it is.
I think women take more flattering pictures.
Yeah. Women take bitter pictures. That's right. Go ahead. Now, what's next?
Like, you've never made a mistake with that big tongue of yours. That's
she
on the
goes
list,
right
too.
Back to it.
That's on the list, too.
How about that? All right.
All right. Score a baseball game. I got to tell you, it's a really adorable thing to see a guy doing it.
I can do it, but it never comes in handy. There's never a time where the league commissioner calls me up and says, we lost the records to the White Sox-Orioles game from last week. Is there any way you were keeping score? You can send me a copy
Still
of
adorable
it.
When I'm with you at a baseball game and I look and see the little kid in you, which
I've
I see
done,
every day.
I have kept the score at many, many baseball games, but I still don't know why.
Do you do it for the whole game? Because I always start. I never just give it up.
Right. Yeah. I wish I was smart enough to know to stop. Even to this day, I'm an adult, and I'll buy a scorecard, and I'll start doing it going, what am I doing this for?
It's taking you back to your day as a little kid, isn't
it?
The smell of lime from the bases, you know?
Yeah.
Remember that? The dust on your shoes.
Kevin's a millennial. I wonder if you ever keep score at a baseball game. Just on your
phone? My
phone
does it for me.
Yeah.
He's got an app.
I think I can, though. I know, like 6-4-3 double play type thing or something like that.
That's shortstop to second base to first.
Yeah,
Kevin's a millennial. He doesn't even know baseball.
Baseball? Wait, what are we talking about?
Name a book that matters. I know you can,
oh,
Steve.
Steve's
and
the
you
king
can
of that.
Too, Bill.
I read a lot. Kevin,
name a
you?
Book that matters, Steve.
Well, To Kill a Mockingbird from just last week.
I will go with my personal favorite of all time, The Great Gatsby, the greatest novel ever written.
Kevin?
My Calvin and Hobbes anthology.
All right. That also
a
counts.
A book that matters, so, it matters right. to him. And again, I think that's cute.
And of the three of us, which is us most likely to get a date?
That'd be Kevin.
That'd be Kevin, yeah.
Yep.
All right. Know at least one musical group as well as possible. Kevin's would be Rush.
Boy. Maybe. I know a handful.
When they say as well as possible, it means body of work, how the band
just
formed,
a huge
who's
fan.
In the band.
Like my husband's would be Zeppelin.
Yeah.
What would yours be besides Hall & Oates?
Air Supply is an excellent band.
Is there any band that really?
Well, the
serious?
Beatles for sure.
Okay. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah,
Steve?
Yeah.
Probably. I don't do that. I don't have that. I go
you don't
from,
have one particular band that you know everything about?
I used to be really into Robert Cray. Kind of hit it big.
Smoking.
And I lost him. Yeah. But no, I'm in a Joe Jackson kick right now.
I love Joe Jackson.
Right, but I'll move
better
on.
Look sharp.
Right.
Is she really going out with him?
I think she is.
I think she is too.
Well, find a
I read
one
it in
musical.
The Sunday papers.
Find one musical group that you know as well as possible, because that is like one guy. A guy should have that. It's just
I think every guy should have that. Yeah.
And this list may be skewed because I picked the ones that are important to me.
Oh, that's fine.
Cook meat somewhere other than the grill.
I can grill only. I can't do anything inside.
Jim
only on
can't
the grill.
Even grill.
Is that true?
Yeah, I do all the grilling. He makes great eggs, which is on the list.
I made something. A lovely beef tenderloin in the oven this week.
Kevin?
I think I'm a better cook than Sarah, actually. So.
Oh.
All right. That's cool.
Wow.
One of them was learn how to make an egg sunny side up, which Jim can totally do perfectly, although I like
that.
Them over easy.
I do that every day.
Yeah.
See, you guys are great. How about this? Throw a punch.
Yeah.
I can throw a little bowl of punch.
That counts?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then more of these. We'll find out how we all rate. Are we real men? We already know the answer to that, but we're just proving
it. We are Devo.
We are Devo. It's Bill and Wendy, and Steve's sitting into it. It's WGN.
We are talking about something that MSN.com put together, but I've seen this everywhere. The skills every man should master.
Mm-hmm.
Master.
We're scoring. I think all of us, Kevin is doing well, Steve's doing well, and I'm doing well. None of us are embarrassed.
One of them is tie a bow tie, and I don't think that's important, but I think tying a tie would be important.
I don't know how to do that. I've got 5 ties or 6 ties that are pre-tied for me and on a hanger that if I need them, I just put them over my neck.
Who tied them for you?
A neighbor. One of my neighbors.
Terry
did
it.
Is
no,
that
Terry
really true? You have ties ready to go like that?
Yeah. 5 or 6 of them at the house.
When did you graduate from the clip-ons? He's not answering.
There was a time where I had a regular tie but a clip-on suit for a little while, and that's hard to pull off. People would say...
When you say hard to pull off, you mean...
I couldn't take it off.
Right, yeah.
It just
so
stays on
me. Obviously you know how to tie a tie.
I can tie a tie, not
Kevin?
A bow tie.
Yeah. I don't know about... I'm not really a fan of bow ties anyway, but yeah, I can tie a tie.
Tell Jamal Mayers that.
Don't.
But I will.
Kevin, don't. It's a trap.
I don't think it's that important. I think tying a tie is important, and I think I should teach you, because I have had to tie my son's ties, because Jim was at work. And they had to go somewhere.
Right.
So I went to YouTube, although this was pre-YouTube. Because back in the 80s, all right, I'll admit I used to wear a tie in a
you
suit
You did?
Coat. Yeah.
Yeah? Were you Annie Hall?
No, but it was very popular.
So would you tie it on your own neck, take it off and put it on them?
Yeah,
or would you do it
one...
backwards? Would you have them wear it and you're doing it
No, you tie
reverse?
It and then there's one spot that you can slip to get bigger or smaller to put over your head. You would know that as yours are hanging there.
Yeah.
Although you can't get them clean that way.
No.
And
they're not clean.
If I just may give a tip out there, I wouldn't buy a tie at a thrift shop.
Because
every, think about it. Unless you're going to
okay,
get them,
we're thinking.
Unless you're going to get them cleaned, what does every man spill on when they're eating? They're at a funeral lunch or a wedding, and you spill right on your tie.
So well, there's going to be food remnants.
Yeah.
Okay, but so if you're not wearing a tie, then you're spilling on a shirt. Would you not get a shirt from a thrift store?
Well, you can wash a shirt.
Oh.
You know, the ties you'd have to get dry cleaned.
I have bought soup at a thrift store. Should I stop doing that?
Learn how to sew on a button.
And have shirt on it?
Can you sew on a button?
No.
Bill?
No
Kevin?
Way.
No.
No.
I taught my kids how to do it, but they need to be taught again. Because I thought that's one thing they should learn before they go to college.
Yeah. I wouldn't have the first idea of how to do that.
I know where to go to get a button tied on, though.
Sewed on.
Sewed on. I can sew a tie.
Drive an 8-penny nail into a treated 2x4 without thinking about it.
I can do that.
You cannot.
I can do that.
Without thinking about it?
The weirdest thing. Because I've put up, Wendy, you know this, because you've been there too, Steve. I've put up shelving and stuff in several rooms, so I kind of had to do that, and I can do that. That's hard to believe, but I can.
Yeah, it doesn't say build a shed. It just, you know, you could pick up a hammer and bing, bang, boom.
Yeah.
Kevin, you could do that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Bertrand?
I can do it, sure.
You choose not to, though, right?
Not my favorite thing. Yeah. I have hard.
Know your poison. Without standing there when someone says, what do you want to drink? Whip it out. Like brand, amount, style, like Booker's Double Neat.
Right. Pomegranate margarita.
With an umbrella or without?
With an umbrella. What if there's a little rainstorm?
Steve, what's your poison?
Just I have a glass of wine, so I don't really have a poison.
What kind of wine?
Red wine. I don't have a...
Go-to drink?
No.
Depends on your mood.
It depends on what the house brand is.
Oh, true. Right. Yeah. Kevin, I know you look poised and ready.
Well, I have a handful of varieties that I like, but typically tequila.
Just straight up?
Well, a little tonic and lime.
Okay, you got to say that then. Whip it out.
Yep.
All right. Hit a jump shot in pool.
Hit a jump shot in pool. There was a day when I could do that, but not anymore.
I think it's cool. I like playing pool. It's really cool when you're out with a guy and they...
That was a nice poem.
That was.
Sorry, I didn't fantastic. Mean for it to do.
Explain exactly what the jump shot is. Is that the
you
ball
hit the bottom
popping
of the ball
over another
and it
ball?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Where it goes in.
I cannot do that.
Kevin? He's busy. Jumpstart a car without any drama.
Yeah, I can do that.
I'm 50-50 on that because I can never remember if it's red to red or red to black. So half the time it's successful and the other half I blow up a car.
Kevin?
Hence drama.
Right.
I can do that, yes.
It's more exciting.
You need to get the jumper cables that I have. You connect it to the corresponding dead car and the live car, and then you plug it in, and if there's a red light, and if you have them connected properly, the red light lights.
Oh, that's perfect.
I would
like to have that.
Because then if the red light doesn't light, then you have it wrong.
It's very hard to run out of battery power now.
Yeah,
because all the lights go off automatically, and
they do things to conserve the battery power.
Yeah, but if your battery's dead, I mean,
right. But it used to be you'd leave your lights on and your battery would die.
Yeah.
Now your lights go off automatically on.
That's true.
Any
not
car.
The dome light if you've turned it into the one position, which we did.
Oh, mine do. Okay. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah.
Because there's three positions, you know, for the light up there.
Yeah. Once one position.
Off, on, and then.
Super on.
And then when the door opens.
Oh.
And closes. Shuffle a deck of cards.
I'm really good at that. Steve?
I can do that,
yeah.
Kevin's busy. Break another man's grip.
I've had to do that a few times today.
Break another man's grip? What does that mean?
On your wrist. If someone grabs your wrist, you can just turn your hand.
You know how sometimes you'll be attacked by ninjas during the Intrust business lunch?
Right.
You'd be able to fight them off
by breaking their wrist. Yep. Breaking their grip. No, I could not do that.
Yes, you could. If Bill grabbed your wrist, you couldn't just pull away.
Let's see some arm wrestling right
now. You want to see that?
Yeah.
All right. I'll end with that.
I'm going to end with this because Kim, you can back me up on this. I don't know if this is a good thing. These are the skills every man should master, and it says tell a woman's dress size. Here's where the problem lies.
Yeah.
Again, I'm rhyming. I'm sorry. if you get a dress for your wife and it's a size that's too small, that hurts.
Yeah.
If you get a size too big, that's offensive. So I think you should just go
that's
in your...
That's a catch-22.
Yes. I don't... tell a woman's dress size... I don't know if that's something you need to know. I would suggest just going in your wife's closet if you want to get her something.
And trying something on.
No!
Or putting it in a box.
But you can never go wrong with shoes, a purse, jewelry, either. And that's safe.
Sweatpants. But even those, the ability
to
just look and go, I can tell by looking at you what your size is, if it's shoes or a belt or a dress or whatever.
Or that's... the taste, though. That I mean, shoes to me.
Yeah.
We went through a real phase where my wife would say, just give me some fun jewelry.
Oh, that's easy.
Fun jewelry? What's fun? I don't get what fun jewelry is.
Spencer's
gifts.
Yeah, that's
the list.
Yeah, that's... Even I don't know what fun jewelry is. That
not,
means cheap.
It just
mean
means
cheaper?
Not expensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
but
yeah,
it means
yeah.
not real.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And it's
for the
kind
most
of
part.
Like costume jewelry.
Fun.
Yeah. jewelry that says fun.
I'm so far from fun that it's
that's when you
hard
go, Emma, we need to go looking for some fun
trust
jewelry.
Me, I've done that over and over and over.
That's but a little tip, you know, Bill has a plan too, but I say go in your wife's closet and take a size, look at the tag on the size of something she's worn within the last week. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of times we keep a different bunch of sizes in there, and so go for something you've seen her wear, and mm-hmm. that would be a great way to get her size.
That is good advice.
And what do you do?
I have a card that I keep in my date book. Yeah, I'm the guy who still has a date book, rest of the world, who's advanced. And on the card, it has her size for everything. Like every article of clothing she could ever possibly wear, that size is listed on that card. And when I go shopping for her birthday or Christmas or Mother's Day or Valentine's Day, it's I have that.
And she's never deviated from that size in
no,
all the
right.
time he's known
she's
her.
She's kept the same. So if she switches, I don't know what I'll do. I got to just buy her basketball stuff or something. I got you a basketball.
Well, there are more of these, and we can go over them at a later date. But you guys passed the test, I think.
Yes. How
we
about
are
that?
Manly.
Yeah, we
Is
are.
Is there a list for women? I want to play. You know what, Kim? I'll find that, and maybe we could do that tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd be
all
great.
All right. Let's do
like
this.
Like the first thing on the list women should do, skills they should master, be nice.
Probably in there, right?
That That's right.
the number one.
There'll be some you can do.
I'm breaking quickly. News is next. It's Bill Money WD.
Bertrand's sabotaging us. Your
what
microphone
did he do?
Was down, and the production button wasn't up, so we could hear
no.
this lovely music, and he's sabotaging
no.
us.
I don't know why Steve would want to do something like that. He seems to be a nice enough guy.
He's got
I don't
a mean
get it.
Streak.
I don't understand it. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, part two of the Wednesday show. If you're anywhere near a window or if you've been outside, you know that it's blizzard-like conditions. It doesn't seem, we're in the city, we're in the heart of the city. It doesn't seem that devastating to us, and we get reports that in different areas, especially south, it's a lot worse than it is right here, but I don't know. I've seen way worse than this. They're already closing things in advance.
312-981-7200. Are you under a snow mound? Call us.
Yeah. It'll be a muffled phone call, but we'll try our best to make out what you're saying to us. You know what? You know who I miss when the weather gets like this is I miss our friend Eddie Schwartz because he used to live for weather like this. He'd be on all night just devoting the whole show to the fact that it's snowing hard.
Getting us freaked out is what he would do.
Yeah, I guess, but he just, you know that phrase, he owned it? Like, whenever the weather was a little bit different, I would want to hear Eddie's take on it at night, and he would. I mean, it sounded like it was just Armageddon, the way he would present it, but he was so passionate about it. I miss that.
He was really great at that.
Yeah.
And he would have been on overnight, so it didn't really happen overnight, so he wouldn't have talked about this.
I swear to you, though, there were plenty of late nights where that was the show, where if it snowed a lot that day or they expected snow, the most of the content for that particular evening would be about the fact that there was a lot of snow coming or other extreme weather conditions. Tom Skilling handles it differently. He handles it, it's almost orgasmic to Tom Skilling, the way he presents it, you know?
It totally is.
I feel guilty sometimes when I'm listening to him, like, this should be a private moment between Tom and his weather. But Eddie presented it in a different way.
Much
you know what
different.
I mean?
Oh, my God. You have nailed that completely.
Yeah.
And I found out a new term. It's called anticipatory anxiety.
What is that?
I have it. It's when you get anxious for something hanging over your head. Like if you had, like I have my acupuncturist appointment today.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, do I have to cancel it? Is the snow going to be so bad? So I'm already worried about that. Anticipatory anxiety is just that. You get anxious about it's something that is forthcoming, in which that's why I have anticipatory anxiety for Donald Trump and being the president of the United States and for this blizzard that may be, you know, what if we're stuck here at work?
Right.
Forever.
Well, didn't during the terrible snowstorm of a couple of years ago, Steve, I think you were here for this, wasn't the case where the snow got so bad? This is the one I'm talking about where people got stranded on Lakeshore Drive, right? So
yes.
Was this
the Groundhog's Day one? Or Groundhog Day
was
one?
It on
I don't remember when it was, but it was bad.
But weren't there employees of the station who just kind of stayed here for 2 days or something, didn't go home?
They got a lot of us hotel rooms because
they did?
Just to be around for the next day. And I'm like, no, I'll come, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And
were you
next,
late?
Well, I went to the train station and it was like being at a ghost town because the trains weren't running.
Right.
You know, so I ended up driving in and I was You know, there just were no cars on the roads. It just was completely like a foot of snow on the Kennedy.
Bill, you and I were working at a different radio station at that time, at different times.
Right.
And I was working on the morning show with Don and Roma.
Yeah.
And we got hotel rooms, much like Steve was offered.
Yeah.
And I took them up on that. And
Did you have to sleep between Don and Roma? That would have been awkward.
I would have enjoyed it.
Well, maybe.
They were fun.
All right, maybe.
And they like vodka as much as I did. So
didn't they both sleep on the extreme right side of the bed?
No, she was more on the left.
Oh, she was? All right.
At least for a while, then she moved over to the right side.
That's what I remember, right.
But we spent the night at the whatever that is right across the street from WLS, the Renaissance.
Oh, yeah.
And I set my iPhone alarm for 4 a.m. so I could just walk across the street and went out to dinner with some of the WLS employees that were also spending the night and working on the morning show and might have had a few too many vodka and tonics. And I brought my own chopped up limes and tonic and used my little my refrigerator. And it was great. I had the whole king size bed to myself. And I was like, this is awesome. And I set my alarm for 4 p.m. instead of 4 a.m. And just on a fluke, I woke up at about 4:45 and freaked out and ran across the street and made it on time.
You're lucky you were so close.
I know.
You never would, if you lived any or if you were staying anywhere else, you wouldn't have made it.
How stupid am I?
Wow.
The whole point of that was to have you here so you'd make it on time.
It almost backfired.
But so we don't know what's going on. If you look out here, it's really not too bad. I want to know if maybe, Steve, you have the answer to this. When are we out of the woods?
Well,
the
we're
blizzard?
In the city right now, Wendy.
But so I mean, we'd have the whole weather the front. Jeez.
Through the afternoon, I think into the evening, it's going to be snowing. But it's mostly, as we've been saying all day, it's mostly to the south and in northern Indiana. You know, so we're kind of on the line of where to get the snow. I think Tim McGill was saying 3 to 6 inches in the city. Tom Skilling was saying a little bit more than that. But it's going to be one of those things where if you're north of it, you're just north of it.
But, Steve, we're in the heart of the city right now, and it's been snowing for 2 hours, and it's not sticking. It
doesn't seem to be here, right?
Let's see. A constant barrage of snow, but there's no accumulation on the ground. No, it's I always call this snow globe snow, where it's just kind of swirling around. It's out there, and it's swirly, but it's not really sticking.
I think I'm trying to get a temperature here. We're above freezing. Well, we're right at 32 now, so...
And they were saying that this is going to be, I mean, really, for days you got this. It's going to be the heavy snow.
Yeah.
Please be careful when you're shoveling.
Yeah.
It's really going to be wet and heavy. And I called home. It's not, nothing's going on. It's just raining kind of in
right,
the range.
But truly, Wendy, I don't think you were ever in the, you know, zero zone of it. Right. And so, you know, you can't give a winter storm warning for part of a county.
Mm-hmm.
So in southern Cook County, where it's going to be a lot worse, you know, the warning is the capital W. In northern Cook County, where it probably won't be, there's a little tiny W in the warning.
So your mileage may vary. Everybody's a little bit different.
Yeah. When's everybody out of the woods?
June?
No, it's going to be actually early July this year.
Oh, early July.
Early July.
Can I get an answer to anything around here?
All we do is answer you and you keep asking more questions.
You're like an episode of Lost.
I wish I knew those numbers because I would just rattle them off right now, but I've forgotten
that. That would be impressive.
But so 9 o'clock tonight is when it's...
I think I'm late afternoon, early evening, but honestly, I'm not completely clear on that. So, but it's supposed to taper off this evening.
All right, we go live to Ron in Oak Forest, our correspondent. Ron, how's it going?
Hey, Bill, Wendy, how you doing?
Good.
Couldn't be better. What's your situation there, Ron? Is the snow bad?
No, this is Midlothian, Ron. I used to talk to you over time.
Oh,
all
sure.
Night,
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, you just said about how it's snowing downtown. Well, obviously, I'm in your old stomping grounds, Midlothian and Oak Forest, and it's really not that bad. They have the plows out, and it's sticking, but it's really not collecting much on the streets and even on the sidewalk. I'd say right now we got maybe about an inch and a half of snow.
What's it like at the old Chuck Cavallini's building?
What is that?
That was a restaurant in Midlothian that's
really?
no longer with us, sadly,
damn.
but always some tasty eats. Is there a lot of snow accumulation there?
Well, not really. Like I said, it's really not collecting that much.
All right.
So, but you know, it's coming down. I mean, and there's like a little wind, but it's just, you know, and you do have to brush off your car, but it's not where it's totally covered.
All right. Well, that's good news then. All right. No reason to panic.
Thank you, Midlothian, Ron.
I listen all the time, guys. That's your correspondent from Oak Forest, Midlothian.
Thank you, Ron.
Back to you. Thank you, Ron.
Yep, very official.
this weather isn't really that bad. Why is everyone saying it's the worst storm this year? Not that bad, from 708. It was 2011, and Roger Badish was stuck on LSD coming home from his teaching
job. And they mean the drug,
job.
By the way.
Right.
They're referring to the drug.
Shouldn't teach under the influence.
Whenever it snows, and we both know Roger has this problem, he immediately calls what he calls a friend of his, Magic Danny, and he brings him... He brings him a bag, and then we don't see Roger for a few days.
Magic Danny.
That's his friend. Yes.
If it's barely snowing, why did they cancel all the flights? It's a preemptive strike. I can answer that one. Snow is missing us completely in Milwaukee. You're welcome.
Well, they were never going to get it in Milwaukee.
Oak Brook blizzard. It's more than just raining in LaGrange, Wendy, but not bad. Is there any chance or indication this storm will poop out and not be as terrible as predicted?
That would be a weather Armageddon if that happened.
Well, we just got another note from the state police I-74, and that's, you know, it's a good deal downstate.
Sure.
Another jackknife semi there, and they expect it to be blocked for about an hour. So
that's, I mean, where
if
it
you
gets
go
dangerous.
To the south of here, and even the blizzard is in Kankakee County, or the blizzard warning. I know it's snowing heavily in Manteno and has been all day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, down to the south where they said it certainly is. And we're getting the snow here. Why? I don't know why I have to defend the storm.
You don't have to.
And no, I feel that I do.
Notice my restraint when I didn't make fun of him saying a semi. Instead of a semi?
Well, you know.
He makes fun of everything we do. Not even a flake in DeKalb. Snowing pretty hard in Oak Brook. And someone sent a picture from Frankfurt and their patio table out in their backyard, which kudos to you, Frankfurt people, because I didn't put mine away either, is covered in snow.
Oh,
Oak
it
Forest,
is.
Pretty bad, actually. There's a picture of a roadway, and it looks like blizzard-like conditions.
Yeah.
Visibility's
Ron
down.
Ron was in Midlothian, which is one suburb away. That's this crazy storm, though, Wendy. One quick suburb away, that's the difference.
Route 57 in Kankakee right now, snow is horizontal, not vertical. That freaks me out. You know when you're driving and it's coming right at your windshield? Honestly, it hypnotizes me.
That's why you should do what I do, and that's wear 3D glasses when you drive. It makes for a more fun experience.
I call Magic Danny. Then we're good to go.
Then you're fine.
Was that his name?
Magic Danny. Oh, okay. That's Roger Badish's friend. Yeah. We'll take a quick break, and then we have more calls, 312-981-7200, more coverage of the snowstorm of the century. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Plan your home improvement and DIY project Sunday mornings on WGN-TV. Watch House Smarts with Lou Manfredini. That's at 10:30, and it's followed by Weekend Workbench at 11.
Big snowstorm hitting our area. It is picking up. Snowflakes are a little more fluffy right now, Bill. If you look, as soon as we said it's nothing big, it's starting to get bigger.
Right. I'm seeing that.
Jan, we go to our correspondent in Northwest Indiana right now. Jan, how's it looking out there?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Well, I live in Valparaiso. I work in Merrillville. And this morning, you know, I was making my way there around 9:15. And by the time I got to work, I'd seen a spin out. And three people in a ditch already at that time. Now I'm on my way, which is basically from the Star Plaza area going eastbound on 30. The ramp to I-65 is down. There was a jackknife semi. There was a semi-truck that spun out. And it's bumper to bumper on US 30 going eastbound. I think people have a false sense of security, like you said, because the wind is blowing and it doesn't seem like it's sticking, but, you know, it was up to my knees when I left the office. So
really?
That's fast.
Yeah.
That happened fast.
There's a lot, and it's basically just building. This morning it was icier. You know, it was 33 degrees when I got in the car. And, you know, it seems like the temperature drops and it gets icy and then it increases back up. So,
well, be careful.
It's out there.
Do you have water in your car?
You know, it's funny you say that. This is the first time I actually went back in and grabbed a banana and some water, and I'm looking at my gas tank just in case.
That's
good
a good
for
move,
you.
Jan.
See, we all feel it. We're like dogs.
Yep.
We can sense it coming in.
Have a banana. Yep. Always have a banana in your purse or your pants. I do.
Jan, thank you. Be careful out there, okay? We appreciate it. You, hey, banana pants.
Yeah, sometimes you... You know,
you
just
crack
to be safe.
Yourself up sometimes, don't
just
you?
To be safe, you should have a banana, you know. Just for
a banana?
For potassium alone, Wendy.
All right, you mentioned how Tom Skilling's take on the blizzard was a little bit different than Eddie Schwartz's.
Yes. You find that to be true, don't you?
Absolutely. And Chicago Ed really handled things in the case of an emergency. And Randy, you were a fan of Eddie Schwartz?
I'm Eddie here right now, Bill and Wendy. We are going to have a terrible storm today. It's just going to be a terrible storm. I've been out on the street looking at everything. I've been trying to get up to the copter, looking at aerial view. They won't let me up. They won't let me up.
They won't. It's not fair,
they
Eddie.
Won't let me up.
I sense that is a weight joke, and I don't appreciate it.
I haven't had this much fun since the Cubs won the pennant. My goodness. This is going to be a big one. It's going to be a big one.
Eddie, I miss you so much. I really do. You did such a good job covering this.
Bill and Wes, thank you very much. I was a paramedic with Cook County.
Yes.
And I'm practicing my CPR because I could be using it today. It is going to be a big... Be careful if you're shoveling out there. It is going to be a heavy snow. And take it very softly. Yeah, I'm going to have a banana now.
Good advice.
Yes. Do you keep the banana in your pants, Eddie?
No. Oh, that's a personal question, Bill. Wendy, I don't. But this is going to be something. This is going to be one you'll never forget. This is going to be a blizzard to be careful about.
Of epic proportions.
Epic proportions. You've got that right. Oh, I miss Chicago.
We miss you, Chicago Ed.
Thank you, Eddie.
Miss you too.
All right.
Okay.
Drive safely, sir.
I'm walking.
I walk safely.
I'm walking.
Please walk safely. All right.
You can't drive in heaven.
No one should drive in heaven. No.
Thank you.
Too hard.
Wow. I loved Eddie Schwartz, and that was just a little tribute to the man, the legend.
I remember on several occasions, Eddie, again, in situations like this, he would make phone calls to various shelters or hospitals or police stations to get their take on
Larry
the weather.
Larry Schreiner.
And a lot of times, after talking to these people for a couple of minutes and wrapping up the phone call, the person on the other line would say, "Thank you, ma'am." And then Eddie would say, "I'm not a ma'am." Woo! He'd get so frustrated.
Which is odd because Eddie here called me you.
I did hear that. I know.
So see, he's getting back at me from beyond.
There is some revenge.
He really was a sweet, sweet man. And you're
one
right.
One of the best.
He covered anything that was going on in Chicago that you were worried about. He truly was the voice of Chicago.
Yeah. We miss him. All right, the game plan is this. We will take a break. Steve will give you the news, and then we have a lot more show coming for you. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN.
Bill, you remember the day when you were back in school.
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Did you find it sometimes it was difficult to pay attention?
Some days more than others, sure.
Were you very good at reading and remembering things?
I was, yeah.
I was not.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
It is a difficult way to learn for me, but everybody learns differently. And there is a new documentary talking about an alternative to the way we learn. It's called Most Likely to Succeed. It debuted at the Sundance Film Festival to rave reviews, and the executive producer, Ted Dintersmith, in the studio with us. Hi, Ted.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We were watching the trailer. I have not yet seen the full film, and me, along with everyone else, can see it tonight at 6:30 at Venue 610, 610 South Michigan Avenue. And what time should you get there?
I'd say 6:10.
Those are the three numbers you want to remember, 6, 1, and 0. Those are key to this equation.
For today.
Okay,
good. And that's easy to remember when it's just three numbers. But when I was talking about learning, every kid learns differently, don't they?
They do. And although in school, you're often not encouraged to learn differently.
Absolutely, because then you are singled out a lot of times as a troublemaker, or you have to stick to what the cookie cutter mold.
Yeah, and I'm visiting lots of schools, and the stories about kids marked wrong for not doing it the way that was taught. So a kid comes up with a creative different way, and instead of celebrating it, they're penalized. That's what's going on in our schools.
They make a point in the movie, and Most Likely to Succeed, to say that the structure by which we have our school system was developed well over 100 years ago, when we learn something, how we learn something, but it's time to change that a little bit.
And I think it's important. One of the points we stress is it's not an issue with the teachers. I find dedicated, innovative teachers everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's the model we've saddled them with and then the policies we've imposed to determine whether schools are doing well or not. And we're really setting our kids on a path to fail instead of succeed. We're driving our best teachers out of the profession.
I was talking to, I have a seventh grader and a junior in high school, and I was talking to them about the multiplication tables. Bill and I had discussed this. I learned them. You had to learn them. My seventh grader knows them pretty well. My high schooler isn't as quick as he should be, but there are ways in which we learned before where you memorize all these things, but we have to realize that there's an iPhone in every kid's hand. There are calculators you have to buy. Some of these things are not as important as they were in the past. How do I phrase that? And would I be correct?
Yeah. And I think I'm a math person. So do I think every kid should feel pretty confident on low number count math multiplication? I do. Should we encourage them whatever way works best to learn how to multiply? Absolutely. The problem is, and this is where it turns up, is in third grade, they will give kids some 100 numbers to multiply. If you're fast at that, you are a gifted math kid. If you're slow at it, you're not. Well, it has nothing to do with math capability. It has to do with agility at a very low level procedure. And so we're telling a lot of kids that have real creative and conceptual math potential, you're not good at math. And we're telling a lot of kids, just because you're fast at multiplying numbers together, you're gifted. Well, that's nonsense.
That's true. And I'm pretty good at math, and I've memorized all my multiplication tables. But when a pizza guy comes to the door and I have to think on the fly to figure out a tip, I don't do it quickly, but I can do it.
Yeah.
Seriously. And I think there are other people like that as well.
And if you're low, you get help from the pizza guy.
I know math because of baseball, because I figured out batting averages. So I know if you succeed 3 out of 11 times, you're a 270 hitter. Yeah. I convert everything through baseball.
But that's a creative way of doing it, isn't it?
It's a creative way. And it's a missed opportunity in our schools. The amount of real learning that we could have kids engage in through sports, whether it's math or science, or when I coach baseball and soccer, I had my kids come up with their team constitution. How do we make decisions on this team? Am I the dictator, or do you want a voice in it? And if you have a voice, how do we want to organize for that? Parents initially thought I was nuts, but then they come 10 years later, parents will say that was the best experience my kid ever had.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I was telling Bill off the air when I went to high school, Riverside Brookfield High School, we had two types of history class. We had one, which was your basic history class, and one was called SEMSEN, Seminar Centered. It was smaller groups. One time you would be watching movies of the war. And I said to Bill, you know, I sometimes wonder if maybe I didn't learn as much because it wasn't like a school setting. But then I thought back about it. I just wasn't that interested in history back then.
Yeah.
Because it's a great way to learn.
Yeah. I mean, you were not in school that long ago, but those are the lessons that stick with you, is the ones, SEMSEN. I mean, I wish I were in something like that, where you engage and you debate each
Discussions,
other.
Discussions, lots
and,
of
them. You know, one of the issues we go after in our film is AP history. AP U.S. history goes from 1491 to the present day. 2 days on the Civil War, 2 days on World War II. It's a laundry list of facts that kids have to memorize. And when people say, oh, this content's really essential, I always point them to Google Texas Tech Civil War. You'll see a journalist ask kids on the Texas Tech campus, who won the Civil War?
After
kid after kid doesn't know.
Oh, no.
They all covered it in high school, but just covering something quickly doesn't mean anybody's learned it.
Go ahead, Bill.
Realistically, is your average school equipped to teach both ways? If we started, because these programs seem like it's a great, great thing, but if you said starting today, every school has the ability to teach the old-fashioned way and the way that they propose in the movie, could a school do that?
Schools are doing it, but there's a really important aspect to how. I think if somebody from Washington, D.C. or Springfield says to a school, you will do X, that will fail every time. And that's what we've done. What we're seeing with our film is schools watch it, and then what they say is, which teachers are interested in teaching differently? Which students are interested in learning differently? Self-select, volunteer, create and invent your own program. Mm-hmm. And schools are doing that in weeks, not years, not decades, weeks. They will set in place a new program. Nobody's being told to do something they don't want to know, but I'll tell you, they don't want to do. But there are so many innovative teachers out there just dying to teach the ways they were passionate about when they entered the profession.
Yeah.
And over, teachers tell me, I'm a big fan of teachers, but they'll tell me each morning I get up, I ask myself the question, should I do today what is in the best interest of my students, or should I do what I'm being told from afar has to be done in the class? And they are not the same.
What about the metric system that they remember, Bill, when we were in school? You've got to learn this. You've got to learn this. We are going to do away with inches and feet. Where'd that go?
Where'd that go? Great question. And, you know, but it's a perfect example, right? It's a low-level procedure. It's not high-level thinking. And we get all bollocksed up in this. And now, you know, we're probably a year or two away from, you know, having smartphones where you just take a picture of something in the English system, it'll immediately convert to Metro. And that's probably even an app that's there today. I mean, it wasn't essential, you know, but we fool ourselves. But it broadened that to beyond metric. Look at how we evaluate kids' reading skills. It's largely based on breadth of vocabulary. If a kid doesn't know obstreperous, they are clearly a kid with lower potential than a kid that does. It's just not true, right? But it penalizes certain kids and it rewards kids in the, you know, type A, two-income, well-educated parent families on grounds that really are not aligned with anything important in life.
Ted Dindersmith is here. He's our guest. The documentary we're referring to is called Most Likely to Succeed. They can see this movie tonight at 6:10. Give all the information again, Ted.
Yeah, it's at Venue 6:10 right here downtown. The snow does not look to be anywhere near like what they predicted
yesterday. It's not going
to
be bad here in the city.
I'll be there if that is. I hope that helps encourage
people. That will encourage people to come.
May send people away in droves.
No.
But we've got a great group here, A Better Chicago. You know, that's what I find when I travel across the country. I've been to 41 states since September. Mm-hmm. I'm meeting with governors, commissioners of education, state legislators. There are these incredible civic-minded groups that have a cross-section of people that want desperately to prepare kids for the world kids will live in the future, not the world we grew up in the past.
Right.
And so A Better Chicago, they've been really energetic and have pulled together this event for tonight. And I'm super excited to be here.
Let's talk more about this after the break. If you'd like to jump in with questions or comments, 312-981-7200. We'll get that done. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Ted Dindersmith is here talking about a great documentary, Most Likely to Succeed. It's about a whole new way of learning, showing tonight at 6:30 at Venue 610. That's at 610 South Michigan Avenue. You can also check out more at abetterchicago.org/events if you'd like some tickets.
Ted, Most Likely to Succeed is the name of the documentary, and it highlights a school called High Tech High. Is that a real school?
It's a real school. We started filming at a dozen schools, and so the film team just gravitated toward these two students at this particular school and captured a story that really is a bit like lightning in the bottle, because it's a great story as it plays out.
And we have a caller who wants to talk to you. Jennifer works at a project-based school. I don't even know what that means, Jennifer.
Hi, first-time caller. Love, love, love your show.
Welcome.
Thanks for talking to me. Actually, my daughter it's a project-based school. So if you have an English class, you're coming up with an idea, and you can present this as a song, a play, a film. Each class, you know, you can present your project anyway, because some students, you know, are better at presenting their material a different way than others. Kids sit around tables and lots of discussions. There are no such thing as chairs and rows at the school. I love it, and my daughter loves it too.
So these are done in a group. This is never done individually. It's always done as a group, the project?
No, individually or in a group.
Oh, either way. Interesting. Ted, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I love I'd actually love to visit the school, but it sounds like a great experience.
Oh, I'd love
experience.
For you to. Yes, we'd love it.
The point I make is if somebody just hears us discussing this on air, they'd say, I think many people would say, well, that sounds like a great summer camp experience. I think what you see watching your child and what people see when they watch our film is that the degree of real learning going on there is dramatically more advanced than what they see in a traditional school. And so these kids are getting good at, you know, doing things and organizing projects and working with each other. And so they're developing this whole set of skills that just don't go away.
And skills that they can use in the outside world, what's expected of them really in the real world, not here's a worksheet and you've got to do this. It's, hey, you go to your job and the boss asks you to do something and now here you're going to present it. So
sounds like a great school.
Fantastic.
Do you want
it's
to mention
fantastic.
It on the air? And
I'd love to. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's called Ideas Academy. It's in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Ted Hamm is the founder and principal, and he's got a couple other schools, an elementary and a middle school. And a lot of people, when I mention that my child goes here, it's like, oh, it's like, it's not for troubled kids. It's for
but
kids
that's
that
what
are
everybody thinks.
Creative.
There are a lot of people who think, oh, it's an alternative school. These children have issues and they can't learn the regular way. It's tough to learn the regular way in this time.
I agree. We have an anecdote in our film from a school in Princeton, New Jersey, Lawrenceville Academy, that most people think is amazing. And I'm sure there are aspects there that are amazing, but they retested their kids who came back in the fall on courses they took and did really well in the school year before. Their grade went from a B plus to an F. They had retained essentially nothing after 3 months. But this caller's child, that child, when they come back in the fall, they still can do things. And actually, what's life about? Life's about doing things. And so I think one of the fights we have to fight is to have people realize this isn't alternative. This is so aligned with life that these are the types of experiences that really bring out the best in kids. And the kids find really interesting.
And they want to go to school. Jennifer, hang on 1 second. Kevin, if you could get her information. Ted Dintersmith in the studio with us, the executive producer for Most Likely to Succeed, a documentary that everyone should see tonight. We'll give you all the details. If you'd like to contact her and maybe visit that school, we'll get her number for you.
Excellent.
Ideally, Ted, should this play out in grade school, high school, and college?
Well, you see a lot of this in the early grades before we try to get serious
right,
about school.
Right.
It really should be. It's just the perfect on-ramp to life.
Yeah.
And so I think I was in Fort Wayne earlier this week. I've gone everywhere. And this guy gets up, big burly guy. He could play defensive line for the Chicago Bears. 10-year policeman.
Is he clumsy?
I still remember the refrigerator. He's 10-year policeman now teaching kindergarten. He showed me videos. He's got these kids doing 3D printing, learning CAD tools, designing prosthetic hands. And you just look at this, you say, oh my gosh, these kids at age 6 are doing the most amazing things.
Yeah, sure.
And then you just think, if that were school for kids,
yeah,
you know, not just in the making things, but as she described, history essays, doing really thought-provoking essays that you iterate on, these kids would come out of high school light years ahead where our best college graduates come out today.
Yeah.
And then you just have to scratch your head and say, if the only reason we're not doing this is it's inconvenient for the standardized test companies, is that a good enough reason to ruin the lives of millions of kids?
Yeah.
Is that a good enough reason to make life for a teacher miserable? And I say it's time to put our kids and our teachers ahead of the standardized test designers.
Mm-hmm.
There has been so much anxiety and depression in younger and younger kids, and a lot of that comes from all the homework that is given to these children. And there's something that I learned about because of my youngest son. It's called school refusal. I never heard anything about it. People say just go to school, but sometimes they get so stressed out, they don't want to go to school. And with something like this, this type of learning, the way of learning, makes them, they can't wait to get to school the next day, I bet.
That and one step further, because, you know, I have a little bit different take on the stress issue. I always say to audiences, tell me something important you did. Did you get there without feeling some level of stress? If we do something we believe in that's hard, we will feel stress. Seeing that we didn't get into the film, and there were a lot. We filmed 600 hours to turn it into 90 minutes. But they interviewed the students during the day. They said, do you like your school? We love our school. What do you like best about it? One of the things they say is we have no homework. They then follow them home at night. They're filming them at 10:30 at night, working intensely on things. They say, wait a minute, I thought you said earlier you have no homework. The kids look at the director. They look at the camera and say, this isn't homework. We want to do this.
Yeah.
And it's that issue. It's kids are like people. They're like teachers, like, you know, people that do radio, great radio talk shows. Give somebody something to work on they believe in, they have a say in, and they think is important.
Mm-hmm.
They blow you away with what they can do. Give you a stack of worksheets where when you ask, when will I ever use it? The best you can say, probably never, but it helps you build grit. You know, kids make good calls. They say, this is boring. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
There's a thing called a binder check at our school, and you have to turn in a binder, and I'm sorry. I am so unorganized, disorganized, whatever. You can look at my desk, my home. I would never have been able to turn that in, and it's a huge part of their grade. That's stuff that, how's that going to help them? Again, people learn differently.
Yeah. Now, there's something interesting going on. I'll plug this because I'm one of their supporters, but there's a new initiative that will be live next year called the Coalition for Access. And the reason I mention it is that the Dean of Admissions at University of Chicago is the chair of it, Jim Nondorf. And it's a alternative way for kids to apply to college, and they're going to be offering digital portfolios where kids, instead of doing mindless worksheets and just having a bunch of numbers, can start showing really great, ambitious projects they take on that they persevered on,
yeah.
failed multiple times, and delivered something they're really proud of. And colleges, there are 90 colleges that are now part of this coalition.
Really?
And they're saying, man, college admissions has a heavy hand in ruining high school experiences for kids. No question.
Bill, what were you telling me? Your neighbor had like a perfect ACT.
Yeah, got the perfect score on an ACT, applied to two colleges, couldn't get into either of the two with a perfect ACT.
But there's, a disconnect here. I think college admissions officers are looking for kids with some level of authenticity, and an experienced officer can see it.
Right.
I don't know this situation,
right.
but often I find kids are, I run into families that have their kid working with an SAT tutor in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Fourth grade.
Oh, my God.
And you think about that. And so, sure, that kid over time will get 800, or will get a 36.
Right.
But what gets hollowed out of that kid in the process?
Everything. Yeah.
And so college admissions officer, and I think the Coalition for Access is particularly inspiring because it's sort of saying we are looking for a different set of things from our kids.
Yep.
Coalition for Access.
Yeah, if you just Google that, I mean, its technical name is Coalition for Access, Success, and Affordability, or Affordability. It's a long name, but if you just Google Coalition for Access, you'll find it.
We'll talk to somebody about that for next year when that goes into effect. I'd love to find out about that. Ted Dintersmith, he's the executive producer. Most likely to succeed is the documentary. Go tonight, 6:30 at Venue 610 South Michigan Avenue. Do they need to pre-register? What do they need to do?
I think they can do that online. And if they can't get in, I will talk to them while the film's playing, and they'll get just as good a time.
Oh, all right, good.
But I'm sure that it's with the weather. I'm sure it'll be fine. So
if they can't go tonight, are there other places? What if an administrator or a teacher's listening and wants to find out more and how to get this into their schools?
Sure, our website is www.mltsfilm.org, like most likely to succeed film.org, or just Google documentary most likely to succeed. Right in the middle of the homepage is host a screening. We have a great discussion guide. We're getting 200 requests a week from schools all over the country.
Tremendous. Good, good. Ted, great to see you.
Thank you so much for being here.
That's Ted Dintersmith. We're going to take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Huff, and it's Wendy Snyder. This is actually a follow-up to something we discussed at about this time yesterday. Some pictures had surfaced online of Charlize Theron, fine, fine actress, having a little bit of a difficult day with her son. She has a young son. He's 5 years old. He had just come from a ballet class. We don't know exactly what transpired that upset the boy so much, but there's pictures of Charlize in a parking lot in Los Angeles, seemingly dragging him. You see her,
using force. I don't know if...
Using force.
Dragging him, I think of a caveman dragging his wife by the hair.
All right. Well, there were no cavemen involved in this, luckily, thankfully, this time. But we were talking about what you do in a situation like that where your child is misbehaving and you're kind of stuck as a parent because you want to do something. You have to move the action along, but you can't be perceived as a monster.
Which brought to mind an article I read online on Sunday by Chicago Tribune columnist Heidi Stevens. To stop a child's tantrum, sometimes you just have to go with it. Heidi, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I read this before we had the Charlize Theron thing that happened, and I'll admit it, I have dragged my kid out of a store kicking and screaming,
sure.
And I was talking about this to my husband last night, and he said the thing that has happened before to him when he's dragging that said kid out, the kid screams, "Help! Yeah. Help! Help me, someone." I forgot about that part.
I don't know this man.
Right. It's not my father, not my mother. I forgot about that part.
That makes it more fun, doesn't it?
No.
It does. Sure it does.
Yeah. It makes for a better story later, certainly.
But has this happened to you ever? Because it's humiliating.
Well, I haven't done the dragging thing, but I will say I'm a big believer in never judging, a parent in what's happening. Probably a super stressful moment. And you're no more right in the head than your kid is in that moment. Like, everybody's eyes are on you. Emotions are running high. You're not thinking logically. You're thinking in the moment, make this thing stop.
Right.
And when you fight fire with fire, you get an explosion.
You get an explosion. Exactly. And I've certainly been guilty of doing what I talked about in the column, which is like trying to really talk them out of tantruming, right? Like, is this really such a big deal? Think of all the things you have to be grateful for, but are you really going to cry and lose your marbles over a Halo disc when you have 100 toys at home? Like, all of this logic I'm throwing at this poor child who's just like, what are you talking to me about? It sounds like, you know, that Far Side cartoon, blah, 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 ginger, blah, 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 ginger.
Yes.
They don't hear, you know, there's no, and none of it's going.
They're not rational.
Right.
And they're, how old's your son? Six?
Six. First grade. Yeah. So what I wrote about Sunday was he came home from school one day. I picked him up at school and he's in tears, you know, ready to start sobbing, starts actually sobbing the second we got in the car. And, you know, I'm all, what happened? What happened? Thinking something terrible happened at school. He said, my Halo disc didn't arrive. It's like the 75-cent piece of plastic that, you know, I paid $50 for in a school fundraiser. And it didn't arrive that day, right? You could get one at Walgreens for literally 30 cents. It was supposed to arrive that day. It didn't arrive. His teacher told him it would be there the next day. And my instinct, right, my reflex is like, oh, my God, a Halo disc. Like, we have 100 toys at home. We might even have a Halo disc for all I know. It's buried somewhere.
Right.
There's a homeless guy. Like, you're going to cry over a Halo disc. That guy doesn't even have a home. So I'm thinking of all these stupid things that I would normally say. And instead, I just said, like, oh, no, that didn't arrive. You were so excited about that. And he's like, I know. And I just kind of went with that. I was like, that's the worst. Oh, when you're so excited about something, it doesn't arrive. And did that for a couple seconds. And he was like, yeah, I know. Like growing a little bored of the sympathy.
Do you know what it's similar to when there's a hostage negotiation? Really, they teach officers to match the energy of the person who's doing the crime.
Interesting.
It's almost identical to that.
Yeah. Well, it's also identical to what they tell couples to do, right? Like, you're not supposed to come home from work and say your wife says, like, oh, my boss was such a jerk today. None of us would ever say this.
No, not a tribute.
Not here, no.
Bosses are great.
Right.
But let's say in a fictional world where people don't work at the Tribune, my boss was such a jerk today. You're not supposed to say, like, well, did you tell him to, you know, blah, 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 blah. You're supposed to say, like, really, what happened? Right? You just listen and empathize. And it's a similar approach. So just listen to your kid. They're upset about something like, oh, no, it didn't arrive, instead of trying to talk them out of it. Well, the beauty was the tantrum ended after, like, all of a minute. Instead of, you know, lasting and lasting and lasting and me trying to talk him out of it and him getting even more emotional because now not only did his Halo disc not arrive, his mom doesn't understand him and is trying to explain away this very upsetting thing.
That is to a six-year-old, though.
It is upsetting. It's legitimately
upsetting. And we forget
that. And we forget, exactly. So I started doing this with both my kids. They're 10 and 6. Throughout the week, sort of everything that they would, you know, come home from school or practice or whatever, very upset about, instead of minimizing it, I was like, oh man, that's the worst.
So if you're their ally, they feel, even though I've got a problem, somebody's on my side. Somebody important is on my side.
Exactly. They feel understood. I ended up calling this author, which I wrote about in the piece, who is a child psychologist. And I said, like, am I onto something here? Or is this, like, a terrible idea? Am I raising these little narcissists who can't match their emotions to the gravity of the situation, right? Like, they'll be married and be like, but then we were out of milk.
Yeah.
It's, you don't understand me. And she said, no. She said, actually, what happens is you teach your kids to do the same thing to others in their lives. Like, they learn to go, like, oh man, that's hard. They actually learn to practice empathy.
Yep.
If you exhibit it to them, which is kind of a beautiful side effect. So not only are you shortening the tantrums, you're also raising empathic kids,
right,
who grow up to be empathic grown-ups. So it's my new favorite thing.
But in a situation like we discussed yesterday, where you're in a public place, or Wendy's situations where she's in a store, she's buying something, and one of the boys isn't acting, will that still work in those surroundings, do you think?
I mean,
it's highly escalated. I don't know if that would work.
It's pretty escalated, although I would say you can probably do some meet-in-the-middle thing where you say, you know, we're going to leave the store now and go talk about this in the car. So some, and then you get in the car, and then maybe
if you can get them in the car.
If you can get them in the car. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
mean,
and every kid's different, and not every kid lasts like this forever. My kid doesn't act like this anymore, but he was younger.
Right.
And you're talking about the empathetic feelings, empathic kids. Just the other day, I said something. He wanted something. I said, I don't know where it is. And I was a little snippy, a little sassy, if you will. And I said, I'm sorry. I shouldn't be snapping at you. I have a headache. And right away, he says to me, well, I hope you feel better.
Aww.
And I'm like, damn it. Mm-hmm. He did it better than I
right.
did.
But yeah, that's but you it. Started it by apologizing. You started the good. I mean, you started the good back and
that's
forth
true.
By apologizing. You
but
know,
the hope you feel better.
You didn't
and
say, why are you asking me for stuff? I have a headache. You said, I'm sorry. I snapped at you. I have
yes.
a headache. Right? So that got it on a good path.
They just want to know that you're experiencing their feelings. And really, I read this and I'm thinking, really, this halo disc, big deal. I'm so with you. As a mom, we are taught to, you know, there are people, little kids have cancer. There are
right.
people starving, you know.
Right.
But all they want is to get past that moment.
Exactly.
So I've learned from you.
Yeah. And you think about as an adult also, do you want someone telling you how many people have it worse than you when you're
no,
complaining about
work.
Something?
That doesn't work.
You know,
work.
Like, oh, I had a lousy day at work. Yeah, well, at least you have a job. You know, there's people out there who don't have jobs. Like, you don't want to hear that. And
right.
it does you no good. It just makes you feel like, wow, I'm talking to the wrong person here.
I got an email yesterday from somebody, a friend of mine, who was listening to us. And he said when he was a kid, his parents used to always pull this out. If he was bad in the store, they'd say, they're going to call the police on us, and one of us, if not all of us, will end up in jail.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that might have worked on
that
me as
worked.
A kid. I don't want to go to jail.
Wait, you have to listen to this phone call. I think it's somewhat related. Hi, Kathy. We're talking to Heidi Stevens, and you had a comment about threatening to call someone.
Yes. My son, who is grown now and has three little children of his own, the oldest, acts just like he did when he was small, so there is good payback as well. But when he was younger, very intelligent boy, and he just knew how to push buttons. I read books how to behave, you know, how to counter and not react to him. But he got to me one day, and he told me he wanted a new mom, and he was going to call child services. And so I just really am thankful that there were phone books back then, because I plopped it on the table and I started swishing the pages and I said, let me look that up for you. And as I'm doing it, I said, you want a new mom? I said, unfortunately for you, and he was small, but he could understand what I was saying. Unfortunately for you, I get to stay here. They'll take you and take you to a new mom. I said, so at least I get to stay in this house.
With wow. all your toys.
Yeah.
What a great way to do it, Kathy.
Wow.
Thank you so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Kathy. Really appreciate it. Heidi, great talking to you about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The column was great. You always do a fine job.
Thank
so
you.
Continued success in everything over at the Tribune.
And thanks. You can find it on the Tribune website. And if you're not a subscriber, can you find it anywhere?
Why would we talk to people who aren't subscribed?
Oh, come on. Because you want people
happen.
To read it. And Katie Hurley is the psychotherapist you called, author of The Happy Kid Handbook, How to Raise Joyful Children in a Stressful World.
Yes.
I think you helped a lot of people with this. And certainly me, I'm going to really take my time and try and do a great job and understand their young problems.
Yep. That's all you can do.
Good.
Thanks again, Heidi. Appreciate
yep.
you being
thanks
here.
For having me.
A quick break, and then we'll discuss this further next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. More good news if you're a Donald Trump fan yesterday, right, from Nevada. What can you tell us exactly about Nevada and Donald
big,
Trump?
Big night last night in Nevada, the caucuses there. As I recall, the number of people who caucused for him last night was greater than the entire Republican caucus.
How about that?
In 2008.
How about that? What do we attribute this to? Anything special?
What do we attribute this to? I would say
they love him.
They love him.
Right.
They just love him.
Yep. Officers love me.
Yeah. You know, and the problem is they're dividing. His opponents are all dividing themselves. And they keep talking about who's going to unite to defeat Donald Trump. Because, you know, he's not getting over 35-40% of the vote.
Right.
But, you know, who's going to quit? Would you quit? I mean, if you're Ted Cruz and you're just a point behind Marco Rubio in second place, would you be the one to say, I'm going to quit?
No.
Or, if you were Rubio, would you?
No.
It's a game of chicken with those two. Somebody's going to pull away, and the other person will benefit from it. I love Ben Carson. I was making fun of Ben Carson a week ago because they said to him before one of the states, they said, what do you think your chances are? And he said, pretty good. I think my chances are pretty good, even though the polls showed otherwise. So yesterday they asked Ben Carson, and Ben Carson said, you know, I think things are starting to happen. He still has that positive attitude, even though there's no reason for it.
Yeah, but don't you kind of like a guy who's like always the optimistic? No,
right? Who well, doesn't recognize the situation?
But why? I mean, I don't think you'd give up either.
I would have already given up.
Yeah, if I'm pulling in 5%.
Yeah, if the numbers are that, if somebody was running neck and neck with them, I'd go, oh, I'm 4% back. I'm 5% back. I guess something could happen. But if I'm Ben Carson at this point.
Don't give up on us, baby.
Yeah.
It's his theme song. Who did that? Starsky?
David Soul.
Hutch,
yep.
Yes.
Yep.
All right, so two questions for you, both of you. Mm-hmm. It's pretty apparent that Trump is going to be the Republican nominee.
It seems that way. I mean, it is a world where anything can happen, but the questions that keep being asked by every political show and every political commentator is this: what has to happen for him to lose this?
Nothing,
and nobody knows.
It's happening.
Right.
All right. Republican nominee.
Yeah.
Comes to a battle between he and Hillary.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because I just wonder if all these supporters are going to, if this means a vote from them or it just means getting him.
The nomination?
Because
I think if you're going to vote for him in the primary, you would vote for him in the election.
Exactly. I can't see a reason why.
The only thing is, again, he's winning with, 35-40% of one party's votes. The mm-hmm. people who vote in the primaries are activists, so they're not reflective of the general public. Can he convey that from party of activists to general appeal? Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't bet against him. I mean, I was betting against him when he announced last June, and I was
wrong. We all did.
Yeah.
Steve, with anyone else, though, you think, oh, there's probably some skeleton in the closet that's going to sink this guy. But in this case, it's the opposite. No matter what they pull out, his numbers will go up somehow. It defies logic.
I'm just thinking, Melania was interviewed today on MSNBC, and I saw a little bit of that.
She's not voting for him. She does not want him to win.
Really?
You don't think?
But remember, Teresa Hines Carey was ridiculed because she was foreign born or she spoke with an accent.
She did, yeah.
Remember, and that was an issue.
Yeah, right.
Back then,
right.
And of course, it's not, and it shouldn't be an issue.
It shouldn't
it's
be.
Absolutely not an issue this time. It seems right. like so.
Melania doesn't look like your textbook first lady.
Where is she from?
She's from Slovenia.
Well, then, how is there a wall that from Slovenia?
He's going to build a wall.
I think she probably immigrated legally. I think you know.
Yeah, she did. Boy, if she didn't, he better check the paperwork
the
and make 1,000% that that's a correct move.
That is interesting.
I wonder.
And here's my second question. So who will win? We don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
But who's going to be his running mate? Aren't you just dying to know who he's going to pick? Do you have any foresight?
Names keep popping up, but I don't know because that's a weird. Anyone you put on that ticket, normally we've talked
may
about
may not
this before.
Want the ticket.
They may not want it is part one. You're right. There somebody like normally if you get that call, you go, this is exciting. They want me to be the vice presidential candidate.
Oh, crap. But should I get the phone?
God bless caller ID.
I'm not answering.
Right. So normally what happens, not all the time, but normally they try to find the running mate who is has some opposites from whoever the presidential candidate is.
Well, that won't be hard this time.
Everyone's the opposite of him. Everybody.
Yeah, but he's so picky that
his running mate will be himself.
Oh, my God. He's going to clone himself.
The Trump and clone Trump ticket.
Here's my prediction.
What?
He'll win the nomination, and he will have to choose a second vice presidential nominee.
Because somebody will turn it down? Is
no,
that why you
because
say
he'll
that?
Choose someone and he won't be happy with them.
Oh,
then...
oh,
yeah, that's because.
But he's a very loyal guy, I think. Well, I don't know if he is. He's
maybe that guy George from The Apprentice, that old guy who used to sit behind him on The Apprentice. Maybe that would be the running mate, or Donnie Deutsch.
Guys, you say this laughingly, and
it's not even a joke anymore.
I know
anything could happen.
He could pick one of his children.
He could pick one of his kids. He could pick Mike Tyson.
I would vote for him then.
The Trump-Tyson ticket, is that a winner?
Oh, totally. Just to, listen to Mike Tyson talk.
Right. That would be
so much fun.
Say
yes.
Yeah, it could be anybody.
Now, it's funny you bring this up because they just put out, and this is, you know, I always say I don't understand the value of endorsements. We just had Nikki Haley endorse Marco Rubio in South Carolina, and it meant nothing. But all these celebrities in the last couple of days or weeks have come forward to say, hey, Trump is my guy. Some of the names may surprise you. Can we come back and go through some of these names of people who are on Trump's side?
I'm dying to hear them.
I think you're going to like these. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN. You know Donald Trump, right? That's the guy who was in the movie Gremlins. He played himself, Donald Trump, in the movie Gremlins. He did. Do you remember that? He was magnificent.
I forgot all about that.
He was so talented in that movie.
Looks like a gremlin's on his head.
Yes,
it does.
It does.
How ironic.
So you say to yourself, well, who in their right mind, are there any celebrities, any famous people, anybody of any power that would be supporting Donald Trump? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of them. I'll give you some of their names. Kid Rock wants Donald Trump to be the next president.
People, are you listening? All summer long, I love that song, but are you listening to who is supporting him?
Kid Rock showed his support for the presidential hopeful in an interview with Rolling Stone, saying that he is, and I quote here, digging Trump. He also added, this will be a fun quote because almost every word is bleeped out. Let the bleep business guy run the bleep business, and his campaign has been as entertaining as bleep. I've never felt more like Gene Rayburn than I just did right there. I should have said blank. Charles Nelson Reilly? What would you like to answer that?
I love his all summer long song. And
Kid
I
Rock?
Like the cowboy song. All right, two songs. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
But yep. Please.
Kid Rock wants Trump to be president, as does country singer Loretta Lynn.
Is she still alive?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to have a major crush on Loretta Lynn when I was young.
The hair.
Her sister Crystal Gayle had the hair. She had more hair.
Longer hair, but yeah. Loretta had the like.
She had the big hair. Yeah, it was like a fountain of hair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it was about her because I'm not a country fan. But when she'd be on with Johnny Carson, I would take notice for some weird reason.
She had a petite little figure and cute lips.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I liked about her. Exactly that. Country singer Loretta Lynn announced her support of Donald Trump way back in December and told a Reuters reporter in January that he is, again a quote, he's the only one who's going to turn this country around. I agree with her about that. He will turn the country around and around and around and around until we fall down because we're dizzy and then we'll throw up.
Boy, you make me look forward to it.
Rapper Azealia Banks. Let's play two.
I don't know what you just said.
Azealia
two
Banks
what
is
are
a
we playing?
I don't know. Ernie Banks used to say that. I assumed Azealia Banks would say the same thing. Is Azealia Banks famous, Kevin? Is that somebody we should know?
Is it a guy
really?
Or a girl?
I think it's a girl. I don't really know exactly who that is. I think she's like a singer or something.
Yeah, she's a rapper. The rapper tweeted at the beginning of February a voice of support for Donald Trump because she has, and she says here, this is sad, she has no hope for America.
Damn.
But she does say, will he bring hope to America? I'm not positive he will he? I guess that's the hope of every one of the candidates is that they'll bring hope for America, but I'm not positive he will.
And this just one day ago, Azealia Banks is bored with the music industry and would rather pick a fight.
Oh, man. These are hard times for Azealia Banks. Jesse James, who is either a TV personality or a Wild Western character. I'm not sure which Jesse James.
He's like the motorcycle guy?
Yeah, West Coast Choppers guy or something like that.
All right. TV personality Jesse James, founder of the West Coast Choppers, posted a lengthy Facebook message in January in support of his former Celebrity Apprentice boss. Now, when we asked Gilbert Gottfried, who was also on Celebrity Apprentice, if he wanted Trump to be president, Gilbert didn't seem that animated about it all. He didn't seem to be that much in favor of it.
I don't care what Jesse James thinks ever since he dumped Sandra Bullock.
Oh, that's the guy who did that? That's the guy. He didn't just dump her. He cheated on her.
I know. Don't do that to Sandra Bullock.
Not to Sandra Bullock.
Sandy B? No way.
Nuh-uh. No, don't.
God, listen to the group of people you have just mentioned and imagine them in the same room.
No,
Kid Rock, Jesse James.
It gets better.
Loretta Lynn surprises me.
But even Loretta Lynn would look around at that party and go, I'm in the wrong room, wouldn't she?
Hopefully.
Look at these guys. Now, Kirstie Alley is also in support of Donald Trump.
I don't know what to think about her anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I know.
What would her ex, Parker Stevenson, say?
I don't know. He's off solving crimes with Sean Cassidy. He doesn't have time to think about who's going to be president. Mike Tyson wants Donald Trump to be president.
Get out.
I was just kidding a minute ago, by the way, when I said Mike Tyson could be the vice presidential candidate. But now, you know, he's in his corner, so who knows?
I hope he doesn't mind. I have tattoos all over my face.
He doesn't mind. He's fine with it, Mike.
Wait, my voice was too low.
It was. Stephen Baldwin.
See?
Goofy Baldwin.
There is always a Baldwin involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm boycotting Baldwins.
Well, now, what will his brother Alec do? Because Alec likes to say, if somebody, you fill in the candidate, if he's elected president, I'm leaving town.
He never did.
What? No, he does not leave. He says he will, but he doesn't. But what will Stephen do? Although that family already doesn't get along, right?
Right.
Alec and Stephen are already not seeing eye to eye.
And who's Stephen's hot daughter who's dating someone famous, too?
Oh.
Kevin could help us with
this. She's a mob. I know.
Yeah,
I know who you mean. I can't remember her name. I don't know her name. You'll be shocked to learn that Gary Busey is a fan of Donald Trump.
Please, read very quickly the name of these people.
Well, your Kid Rock, you got your Jesse James, you got your Mike Tyson, your Stephen Baldwin, your Gary Busey.
Loserville.
You know what it's like? You know that show that Dr. Drew has for people who have had rough goes at it? You know, it's like a Celebrity Will Get Better Club or something. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, Celebrity Therapy or
something.
This
is like the cast for that.
Or...
The actor endorsed Donald Trump all the way back in 2011. He's a visionary, is that Gary Busey, after being fired from season 4 of Celebrity Apprentice, and then offered his praise for the presidential hopeful again recently. He's a great guy. He's sharp. He's fast. He can change the country after the last 8 years. Dennis Rodman, Wendy.
I like Dennis, but
this
really...
This gets better and better.
This is the land of the misfit toys.
Dennis Rodman, it is.
I'm sorry.
Dennis Rodman wants him to be the president, the next president, as does the Hulk, Lou Ferrigno. Lou Ferrigno, sweet Lou.
Lou, grab Loretta Lynn and get out of there.
I hope Donald goes all the way, says Lou Ferrigno, and then his shirt busted open and his muscles popped out of him, and he turned green. Hulk Hogan is also on
this
the Trump bandwagon. No, these are all legit. I swear. Hulk Hogan.
Is anybody working in the names you mentioned?
Yes. There's a couple of them coming that are working. Ted Nugent, again. Let's all pretend to be shocked.
Wang dang this doodle.
Tila Tequila is a big Trump supporter.
I don't know who that is.
She's the reality. She's the softcore adult film star / TV reality star.
Is that a real name?
No. Wayne Newton wants Donald Trump to be the president. The Las Vegas entertainer announced his support on Fox and Friends. I love Donald, and he would make a great president, he said. But he also voiced his support for other hopefuls, including Carly Fiorina, Jeb Bush, and Ben Carson. See, Wayne Newton is so caught up in the world of Las Vegas show business that he thinks that 4 people can be president. You don't have to just choose one. He likes the quadrangle of Trump, Fiorina, Bush, and Carson. Even though 2 of those people are no longer running, he's fine with that.
He's just trying to get along with all people, so right. He should be taken off the
right.
list.
Right. Willie Robertson, you know who that is, right?
No.
The goofiest of the Duck Dynasty guys. He's the grandfather who's always saying negative things about the gay community.
He can have him.
Yeah.
Willie Maybe
Robertson.
He can be the vice president.
That'd be great. That'd be fun.
That's America. Can I tell you?
Yes, it is.
Trump and Duck Dynasty.
Yes, it is.
That is America.
A goofy haircut and a goofy beard. That'll be the logo. They won't even show their faces. Now, this one honestly does surprise me a little bit. Jesse Ventura. Former wrestler and then politician himself, the former Minnesota governor.
Yeah, but he's friends with the Hulk and Hulk Hogan,
yeah,
the 2 Hulks.
Yeah, he's friends with all people named Hulk. That's true.
And they're on this list.
Right.
So they went out for coffee and they talked about it. And they said, let's join this pro-Trump group.
They went him over. Charlie Sheen, who's had a bout or two with crazy. He's fine with it. He wants Trump. Ivana Trump. That's the former wife, one of the ex-wives of Donald Trump.
Well, sure, because, you know, she's still carrying his name.
Right, right. Terrell Owens, former football great. And then I'll give you one more. This is our last supporter of Trump. Well, there are many more, but we only have time for one more. And that is the coach, Mike Ditka, is in Trump's corner. Here's what he says. I think that he has a fire in his belly to make America great again and probably do it the right way, he told the Chicago Sun-Times.
He's dead to me. He's dead to me when he put that Packers uniform on in right. that commercial, so what do I care what he said?
I think that messed him up. Mm-hmm. I think the day he put on the Packers jersey messed him up. All right, we're going to take a quick break, then we'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.